Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reese, sir. The Steelers don't lose on Monday Night Football. Last night in Pittsburgh, Aaron Rodgers tossed a pair of touchdowns as the Steelers beat the Dolphins 28-15. It's their 23rd straight win on Monday night. They haven't lost since October of 1991. Pittsburgh also takes a game lead on Baltimore for the top spot in the AFC North. Week 16 begins Thursday in Seattle with the Seahawks hosting the LA Rams. In other news, Patrick Mahomes had surgery yesterday to repair a torn ACL. He's expected to make a full recovery, but not expected to be ready for the start of the 2026 season. In college football, the winter transfer portal opens on January 2nd. Nebraska's Dylan Raiola announced he's entering the portal yesterday. Florida's DJ Lagaway is also portal bound. And in the NHL, the Blue Jackets look to halt a 5-game slide. CBJ will host the Anaheim Ducks tonight at 7. You can hear that game on The Fan with coverage at 6:30. This update sponsored by Whiskey War by High Bank Distillery. Drink local. Drink High Bank.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Barry here.
Oh, Reese came in and he's handed me papers.
Yeah.
And then, he said, "You see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me." Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Tuesday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. As always, the great Reese is here. Jacob Reimer here as well, sitting in for Bake. Preloaded up for you. 9:30, our old buddy Bill Rabinowitz is going to drop by. He wrote the book Buckeye Brotherhood, and see if there are any lessons we can glean from last year's run that potentially could help this year's Ohio State attempts to win back-to-back national championships. Hit you with the real truth coming up at 10 o'clock. Uncle Dom at 10:30. We will blitz the NFL, a wild weekend in the National Football League. Incredibly circumstantial stuff happening on the field and off. We'll get to that at 11 o'clock. And then Porty on the Blue Jackets at 11:30. Event to look forward to, which is nice. Just imagine, if you will, if this weekend Ohio State were playing Michigan in the college football playoff. Less than a month since they played the game, and the way that the brackets played out, it was Ohio State and Michigan playing in the college football playoff. My youth version of that is happening in 1AA. As a kid, my very first memories of college athletics were Cat Grizz games, Montana State games. My middle brother, who's just 2 years younger than me, Tuck, he always loved the Grizz. I always loved the Cats. And so we would go head to head. He won most of the time. Montana was the better program for most of the time. They have played 124 times all time. Played 124 times. Since 97, it's been called the Brawl of the Wild, but for Montanans, it's called Cat Grizz, is what it is. And that was the common way that it was referred to. And it's a whole state that pulls at each other, and it's kind of a way of life too. The Montana State side of it is the more agricultural ranching side of it. This is before Bozeman became Hollywood, which is what Bozeman's become in the last 15 years. But in the old days, it was the more agriculture school. It was the farm and ranch kids went there, and then Missoula was the more of the liberal arts school. So it was law and pretty decent law school. And if you want to be in journalism, which is odd, I ended up where I ended up, but my brother ended up at Montana. But that's kind of the way that it was. And so it was a war that was waged for a way of life every single last Saturday of the season in November, much like Ohio State, Michigan is the same. And this is, by the way, what we still love about all of this is that you still have those rivalries at the end of the year that mean a little bit different. And on any given Saturday, anything can happen. And there is a hatred that's built up, in the case of Ohio State, Michigan, in the case of Montana, Montana State, for over 100 years. And you could apply that to various rivalries around the country, and it's there in all of them. And I have to tell you, it is a weird feeling that for the 125th time, they're going to play in a 1AA semifinal on Saturday. The game will be played in Bozeman. And it's odd. And it got me thinking, when this inevitably happens and Ohio State does play Michigan in the playoff, or God forbid, in the Big Ten championship game, how's that going to feel? Because I'll tell you, from my perspective here, and I don't follow those two programs the way that I did as a kid. I watch them from afar, and we'll check out the games when I can. And quite honestly, root for both of them now because they're loaded with Montanans on their roster. And the truth of this particular game is the winner here is going to be the heavy favorite to win the championship in 1AA because the Dakota schools are out. South Dakota's out. North Dakota State's out. UND's out. University of South, or South Dakota State, they're all out. There were some upsets. And so the winner here is going to be the heavy favorite to win the national championship. And you try to imagine what that would be like, what it will be like when Ohio State plays Michigan for a Big Ten title, when Ohio State inevitably plays Michigan for a semifinal or a national championship game. I can't imagine what that will be like, but what I can tell you is I feel like the intensity on this one, and this one is a 100th of the importance of when Ohio State plays Michigan, but the nervous energy from this one is quite real, and it actually feels more. Because we've always had a playoff at 1AA, it almost feels like there's more on it than there is when they play every year at the end of the season. And I do wonder if inevitably that's where we will get with Ohio State, Michigan, because eventually they are going to play for a second time. Eventually, provided Michigan can dig out of this cesspool that they're in right now, they're going to play in a Big Ten championship game, and they're going to play in a college football playoff. And honestly, if they didn't have all the scandal up there now, that Michigan team that was coming back next year was going to be pretty good and was going to be there for you. And I don't know if it's good or bad. And I guess this is kind of a summation of college football at the moment. I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's different. And I can tell you that the intensity is ratcheted up because the stakes now feel even higher than they did 3 weeks ago when they played.
I am actually looking forward to that day when Ohio State plays Michigan in a postseason berth for the college football playoff. Maybe when they expand the thing, they do one of the play-in, maybe actual Big Ten championship. Because you've been hearing for so long, like, well, what happens if they play in the postseason? What happens if they play a second time? I think it'll mean just as much.
I'll do this. I'll bring college basketball into this right away.
Yeah,
it's like when Carolina met Duke in the Final Four.
That was big. Yeah. That was huge.
That was so big. And it was the first time they met in that kind of situation, too. So just imagine when it's Ohio State and Michigan for football. It's going to be maybe even bigger.
Was that Krzyzewski's last game?
It was. Oh, yes. And I'm saying that with a big grin on my face.
You can hear the smile on his face.
It comes through. It comes through. Yeah. Because it's different now because of the playoff, because of the March Madness, and it's been this way for a long time. 1AA's played a playoff for a very long time. It's different because it's over. It's over. And the reality is this year going into the Ohio State Michigan game, certainly you knew that if Michigan lost, it was over. But in the previous several years, it felt like no matter what happened, both were going to move on. And there is something to the finality of the loser is done and the winner most likely is going to win the national championship. I mean, that's kind of the thing that's at stake here. And the other thing on this, and just to put a ribbon on this, it does make me even more bullish on something that we've wanted for a long time around here, and that is a true group of five national championship. We're past due on that. And there needs to be, if you're a Mac kid and you play at Ohio or Miami or, I mean, hell, James Madison going out to Eugene, like that's going to be a bludgeoning. There's hardly defined a scenario where it's not. Is that an operation that would have been better served? Would their fan base have been better served? Would it make better television shows? I mean, that's really what this comes down to. It's just greed and television shows. Would the television shows be better if they could play for their own national title? My hunch is yes. And we ought to just acknowledge that there's a difference between the two.
And games with stakes bring people in all the time, every day of the week. Hey, does this? Hey, it's a football game. Well, I'm an American. I love football. Oh, does this game matter? Why does this game matter? Now I'm interested. You know, social media took me to Stephen F. Austin and Montana State Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought to myself, well, there could be Brawl of the Wild in the FCS semifinals. Like, that'd be awesome for college football and for college game day even to go to Bozeman. I think they're doing the first round of the CFP, the game day circuses. But like those kinds of things got me thinking the same thing of, well, if you have a game with teams that people care about that they don't see all the time, but now there's stakes. Okay, you've got me. And there are so many different places now that want to do live sports. This can be more of that to where you can even make money on these.
Absolutely, you can. And you'll fill stands and you'll do all the things. And the biggest difference between football and basketball, obviously in March Madness, you can have Cinderella. I don't have it. In basketball, you can have it. A team can get hot, they can knock down shots, and you can make a run and get all the way to the Final Four. We've seen a lot of them do it. In football, it's pretty finite because of the physicality. And so when you have that carrot, when you have games that have stakes, the interest will be there. So going to be a fun weekend, and got me thinking a little bit about what is inevitably going to happen when the Buckeyes and Wolverines play for a game that is either for a national championship or a Big Ten championship or an advancement to the championship. It's going to be wild when it does happen, and it's going to be nervy around here when it does. Lots to get to. I was off yesterday. Wanted to weigh in on some of the quite the Heisman night, huh, Reese? Good Lord. We'll get into some thoughts on the Heisman, some of the behavior stuff there. We'll get into Army-Navy a little bit, some of the things I saw there, and some Buckeyes trying to track down some history when it comes to unanimous All-Americans. We'll get to all of that coming up next. We're off and running on a Tuesday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
A lot of hosts have been on our airways in the past 30 years. Some good, some bad, some really bad. Anyway, sorry for that. The Fan.
Now is the Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
All your favorite and least favorite fan shows are available wherever you get your podcasts. Just type in 971 The Fan to the search bar and hit that subscribe button. It's free.
We're the land of the free and the home of the sunburnt, freckled fat guy.
Do it now. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Lots of sunshine in the forecast today and warmer with lighter winds as daytime highs get into the mid-30s. For tonight, partly cloudy to mostly cloudy skies with lows in the upper 20s, but we will have breezy winds, so there will be a bit of a wind chill. Continuing into Wednesday, however, Wednesday will have a mix of sun and clouds with highs getting up near 40. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
The Big Nine was a sad, incomplete place. Enter Ohio State. The rest is history. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. 10 feet tall and bulletproof isn't just a saying. It's a way of life. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, Bill Rabinowitz is going to join us in about 12 minutes. He wrote the book, Buckeye Brotherhood. He will join on last year's run through the college football playoff. He'll join us in about 10 minutes on that. Speaking of the playoffs, playoff time means brackets. Mountain Dew and The Fan are giving you a shot at $500 in the college football playoff bracket contest. Just fill out your 12-team bracket before the first game kicks off this Friday. Enter now at 971thefan.com. Heisman Trophy awarded over the weekend. I had Mendoza on the top of my ballot. Reese, I'm sure you discussed yesterday as well. You had him. Did you go him number one as well?
Yeah, mine was Mendoza, saying Jeremiah Love, 3.
So I had it Mendoza, saying, and then Jacob Rodriguez, 3. Rodriguez was... As I've said this many, many times on my ballot, I always look at how you played against the five toughest teams that you went up against. I really believe that Jeremiah had a chance to win this thing going into late November, because this is a really difficult ballot. It was a really difficult ballot to fill out for me from the standpoint of there wasn't anybody statistically, excuse me, there wasn't anybody statistically who just stood out. Like, there was no 1,800-yard receiver. There was no 4,000-yard passer. There wasn't anybody who was 44 touchdowns, six picks. I mean, we've had those with Burrow and so many of the guys through the years, Bake and Caleb Williams. I mean, there was these guys, these massive, and you didn't have anybody like Travis who did something that had never been done before. So for me, it always came down to how did you play against the five toughest opponents you played? And it really came down to Mendoza saying in that Big Ten championship game. And it was a tough one. And I felt really good about it by the time I saw the way that he performed, the fact that Ohio State couldn't get off the field on third and fourth down. So that was kind of the deciding factor for me. What was it for you, Reese?
It was that for the first time all time, Indiana was the number one seed in the college football playoff. Indiana was Big Ten conference title game champion. And just when they needed him to make plays, he did all season long. Yeah. And so I think he also took really great care of the football. I mean, him and Saiyan did stuff that, and you've said this before, you plug in the video game and it's hard to do. You know, the accuracy, the big moment moxie for Mendoza. And I thought, yeah, he was clearly deserving of that, having the best season lead. I don't know what Indiana is without him. I don't think that the number one seed in the college football playoff, I think that weighed the biggest on me.
Do you guys ever recall a time when there was a teleprompter for the speech at the Heisman?
No.
This was a first, right?
Maybe.
I mean, I picked up on it right away because for two reasons. Number one, I mean, you could tell he was reading. It was an incredible speech that he gave. It was long. Usually Heisman speeches, they want them wrapped up because they have something that they got to start at 8 or 9 o'clock. And so they want those done so they can go end it. In the old days, it used to be 30 for 30s. was it a bowl game they fed into on Saturday night, I think? The Washington, was it Boise State or something? A bowl game? I think it was.
I don't remember. I switched over to
I can't help because I was watching college basketball.
Of course.
Ohio State, West Virginia.
Yeah, it was. But anyway, so you had the long speech. First time I ever remember a teleprompter being in it. I thought he landed the plane. Pavi, obviously, like, I was actually disappointed in the apology because that was the thing that didn't seem like him.
He didn't write that.
No, that's agent, clearly. Like, dude, if you want any sort of career beyond this, you got to get this wrapped up right now. Like, you're already a flight risk as an NFL prospect, because from the looks of it, you're 5'8", is the best I can tell. Because Julian looked like he had like 6 inches on him. I mean, is that over? I don't think that's overstating. I feel like he's 4 or 5 inches short, at least shorter.
Jeremiah Love is listed as 6 foot. Diego Pavia is listed at 6 foot. And there was a difference between the two of them. Now, Mendoza dwarfed everybody.
Yeah, yeah. He looked like a legit 6'4", 6'5".
Well, right? Yeah, him and Julian were pretty close in height together, I would say. Mendoza and Julian.
But no way Pavia's
5'11". No. So, by the way, isn't it interesting, Jacob, you mentioned the height of Julian. I feel like there's this perception that Julian is small.
Yeah, I feel like that too.
Then he's not.
Yeah.
He's not in any way. I made the comparison with him a long time ago that he reminds me of Bryce Young, but bigger. Because Bryce Young is 5'11", 6 foot, barely 200 pounds. Like, Julian is a legit 6'2", and all of it. But the Pavia behavior did not surprise me too much. I think that's kind of the way that that he's kind of ran. And I get it. This is a guy who nobody expected. He shouldn't have been there. There's no reason for him to be there. But he did. He overcame all the odds and he did it. And then he had the Saturday night that he did. And then the apology that came afterwards. I thought the apology was about the only thing that was disingenuous. I think all the rest of it kind of checked out with, a little bit of who he was. But, I love the Heisman. I've given some thought about, you know, a lot of people calling to move it for after the college football playoff. I think if you do that, I think, Reese, didn't you have the idea last week? Like, just create a second award for that.
Yeah, you get a postseason MVP.
Like the Hart.
Why isn't there one already?
There's an offense and defensive national championship game MVP. A guy who hosted a show here was actually won that one time. But that's a good question. Like, why isn't there a college football playoff most outstanding player? Because I think that could evolve into like what the Conn Smythe is for hockey, where that has a massive amount of importance. And you hand out that trophy, and then you award the college football most outstanding player of the playoff award to more likely than not, it'll be a player on the winning team. Rare to win the Conn Smythe if your team doesn't win it. I don't know if it's ever happened, but you can certainly do it. And maybe that's something that we look into as a sport among about 15 billion things that this sport needs to look into and adjust. But I think the Heisman's good where it is. I don't really want to see it move to the end. My fear then would be it would just end up being the quarterback on the team that wins a national title.
Yeah, it would go. I mean, whoever's the most indelible image of the college football playoff is likely going
to
be.
Well, last year, would you have given it to Will Howard or Jeremiah Smith if that were the case?
That's a good question.
Probably would have been Will.
Yeah.
If you would have looked at the entire playoff, right?
Yeah, he was exceptional. So it's JJ, but Howard, you know, it's to your point of the quarterback, you know, is likely the one that's going to be the engine for a team making a playoff run.
Yeah, it is.
It's the most important position in the sport. I remember like 12 years ago, I tried a fun hot take, and this was buttressed by Peyton Manning making the Super Bowl while not throwing the ball 5 yards down the field. I was like, you don't really need a great quarterback to win anymore. And that takes the worst aged.
Freezing cold takes there.
It's so stupid.
And by the way, speaking of that, I'm sure you guys talked about this yesterday a little bit. Like, that's what reminded me watching Phillip Rivers play Sunday.
That was fun.
It was fun. But it was a little bit like Manning that year when he couldn't throw it because of, was it his neck or his shoulder?
Neck into shoulder or something? It was all something sorts screwy.
And when I'm watching Rivers on Sunday, it just reminded me of Manning that last year in Denver where he had to be so anticipatory with throws that it was almost like as soon as he said the cadence, the ball was out of his hand to a place and he hoped that a receiver would get there before the defender would, just because you couldn't drive the ball anymore. So it's funny you bring up that with Manning because that's what I thought of watching Rivers play, which was awesome, by the way. Very cool, very inspiring. Army-Navy, pretty inspiring as well. Blake Horvath, man, incredible player, incredible amount of luck in the last 5 minutes of that game. The amount of times that it could have gone another way, it felt like that was Army's game to win, and Navy stole it and had the football gods on their side. So I still love the purity of it. I love the passion of it. I love the idea of who sings second and all of those things. So that hit pretty good. We also, just to keep you updated on where we are from an All-American standpoint, 4 Buckeyes were all named first-team All-Americans by the AP on Monday. All of them were also named first-team All-Americans by the Walter Camp. So those 4 Ohio State players need All-American selections from either the American Football Coaches Association, Sporting News, that's Billy Bender, or the Football Writers Association of America to become consensus All-Americans. All 4 of those guys. My hunch is all 4 of them will get it. That one of those spots at least will have all 4 of them as consensus first team All-Americans. I have to imagine you had to go back a minute to find a time when Ohio State had 4 consensus first team All-Americans.
And certainly a time where they had the most consensus All-Americans of any school in the country. Consensus that gets you the tree?
No, first team All-American gets you the tree.
Okay.
I think. I mean, I said that you asked it emphatically and then I answered emphatically. I think it's if you're a first team All-American, you get a tree is the deal on that. Carnell and Sonny, each second team All-Americans by the AP. Julian saying Caden Curry, third team All-Americans as well. This Buckeye team obviously loaded with talent. Can it manifest in a national championship? It did a year ago after adversity. What lessons can we take from last year and apply to this year? Bill Rabinowitz wrote the book, Buckeye Brotherhood. He joins us in 2 minutes. Fisherman Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fisherman Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, here's what's up on a Tuesday edition of the program. He has been on the Buckeye football beat for a very long time. He wrote the book, Buckeye Brotherhood, on the 2024 season in the improbable national championship and the run that came with it. He is Bill Rabinowitz, and he joins on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Bill, thanks so much for taking the time, buddy. Let's go back a year ago at this time as you were getting set to cover that game in the Shoe against Tennessee. What did you expect to happen?
I had no idea. I didn't know whether I'd see a team that was angry, inspired, motivated, or a team that was ready to mail it in. I mean, I just didn't know. The Michigan game was so dispiriting, you know, that loss. And, you know, we didn't know really what happened behind the scenes. We'd heard kind of murmurings of team meetings or what, you know, whatever. But, you know, especially when you get there, that first of all, it was really cold, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And it was early, you know, when the stadium first opened, it was all orange, mm-hmm. you know, and that tends to be visiting teams tend to get there early anyway. And, you know, and then Tennessee linemen took their shirt off and you're thinking, this is just like surreal. And then the first quarter happened. And I remember thinking, oh, this is where this team has been all year. Mm-hmm. and that's kind of what I thought. But no, I had no idea.
The path that they took, and I mean, you can't help but, and I used this imagery a lot last year in regard to that football team, because there was it was kind of Ohio State last year fighting with both fists forward, right? I mean, they were all in as can be, not just with their roster retaining it, but portal, signing day, all of it. They kind of went as big as Ohio State can do. And there was almost, it was a little bit of like Sherman through the sea, right? Another Ohioan who just laid waste to everything in its path. When did you start to realize that, was it the Tennessee game or was it the Oregon game? Was there a point when you're like, oh, we're watching history here?
I think it was the first half of the Oregon game. I mean, the Tennessee game was impressive, mm-hmm. You know, but I wasn't shocked by that because I knew that the Ohio State was capable of it. But to go to the Rose Bowl and just annihilate Oregon the way they did, 34-0 midway through the second quarter, you know, it's the number one team in the country, the only undefeated team. And, you know, I thought that Ohio State would win that game, but I didn't think I'd see that. It reminded me of the Wisconsin game in 14, you know, the Cardale game, 59-0. That's what it reminded me of. But, you know, but Oregon was number one. Wisconsin mm-hmm. wasn't number one. And so that was the game that I thought, I'm watching the national championship team. Nobody's going to beat these guys. That's what I thought. I mean, I knew Texas would be a challenge, but I didn't think Notre Dame had much of a shot.
As you've talked to folks for the book, and the book is out now, Buckeye Brotherhood, perfect holiday gift for your loved ones out there and available now. As you wrote the book and you talked to the folks involved with it, when did they know they were onto something special? When did they know what happened was possible?
It was the team meeting that happened 3 days after the Michigan game. They lost the game, and Ryan Day met with his leadership group the Monday of the game after the game, and they said, we need to have a team meeting, just you and the players. And, you know, not to give away everything, but basically one team entered the room, an angry, you know, frustrated, depressed team. And then through talking it out, they became united. And one player after another told me that one team entered the room and another team left it. Yeah. And they knew. They knew they didn't know they were going to win it necessarily because, you know, it's a 12-team playoff and who knows. But they knew that they had solved their issues, that they were a united team, that they'd come back for this. I mean, they didn't beat Michigan, obviously didn't win the Big Ten. This was all they had. Mm-hmm. But it would have been a wasted year. And football players know that their careers are not indefinite. You know, you better take advantage of it when you can. And so they were incredibly inspired. So when I talked to players about that meeting and talked to Ryan Day about that meeting, they knew then they were on to something special.
Bill, what can you tell? I mean, he was only here for 1 year, and it's not Burrow at LSU, but there's some similarities. Certainly Burrow was at LSU for 2 years and obviously did all of it, but Will was just here for 1 year. He has the, you know, kind of the snafu in the Oregon game. Then I thought like he grabbed the team by the throat a little bit Penn State week. What did you learn about Will Howard, who was here just 1 year, but now has this eternal spot in Ohio State fans' hearts?
Right. You know, anybody knows Will Howard knows what kind of an infectious personality he has. I mean, just a really outgoing, charismatic guy. But he had to thread a needle. He comes here. He'd been at Kansas State for 4 years. And he knows a quarterback has to be a leader, and he's a natural leader. But he also knows you can't force it. You can't walk on the campus and say, I'm the guy. You got to earn it. And so for a while, he didn't say much. Just got to know his teammates, and that really earned him a lot of respect. And like I said, he's a very easy guy to like. And it was clear pretty early on that he was going to be the guy. And yeah, he, you know, in terms of the intangibles, Will Howard is everything you want a quarterback to be. He takes responsibility, he leads, all that stuff. So yeah, the playoff run that he made immortalized him in Ohio State history. There's no question.
Do you, having written the book and having observed that run this year and then having observed what's gone on so far this year, do you understand why they kind of went out of their way to flush last year those who remain? Like, that's not our team. We got to start from ground zero. What kind of did you make of how the guys who returned this year, who played key roles last year, Caleb, Jeremiah, so many others, the way that they approached this season?
Yeah, because so many of the starters this year are new. They lost 8 starters from last year's defense, for example. They knew that they were going to have to create their own legacy. And look, Garrett, guys like Jeremiah and Caleb Downs, Ohio State wouldn't have won the national championship without them. But they knew that there were a whole bunch of guys, the Caden Currys and Caden McDonalds, who were role players but weren't headliners. And they knew that those guys wanted to make their mark. It's one thing to, you know, get a ring and all that stuff. But if you're not a key player, an instrumental player, it doesn't mean as much. And so they knew that for this year, you know, they had a chance to create their own legacy. And Ryan Day talked about it, but some of that's just coaching, right? You can't rest on last year's laurels. You have to move forward. Last year was last year. So there was going to be some of that, but the extent to which they really downplayed it. But now you see they're embracing it. Now they're talking about repeat, you know, now they're saying, you know, which is fine. They should. But they put that in the background for a long time because they wanted to carve out their own identity. And they did. I mean, Ryan, how many times have you heard Ryan Day say, you know, this is a competitive, edgy team? Mm-hmm. It's because of that. They want to create their own legacy. And, you know, except for the Indiana hiccup, they have so far.
Yeah, they really have, Bill. Talking to the great Bill Rabinowitz, been on the Buckeye Beat for a very long time. His book is out, Buckeye Brotherhood, on the 2024. What an unbelievable season it was that manifested in a national championship. This team trying to do the same this year. One thing that I noticed immediately with Coach Day's approach this year was he was playing the long game, right? He was playing for 16 games.
Yep.
He didn't bury people this year. It was like, if you get up 28, let's just cruise and handle our business. Not a lot of sense of urgency in some of those games where the talent didn't equate. And quite honestly, this year, there were a lot of games where the talent didn't equate. But the talent's going to equate from here on out. And the talent equated on a Saturday night a week ago against Indiana. If there are flaws to this team this year as they attempt to track down what the 24 team did, where do you see them, Bill?
Well, I think the run game is still spotty. People, including me, kind of got a little fooled by the fact that in November they ran the ball better, but you have to consider the opponents, right? Mm-hmm. It was Purdue and UCLA and Rutgers, and Michigan wasn't all that good defensively this year. And Indiana stoned them. I mean, Indiana, you know, more or less stuffed the run. So I think they might need to make some changes on the offensive line. Or at least rotate some guys like they did last year. Now, Gabe Van Sickle replaced Tegra Shabola in the second half of the Indiana game. You know, I don't know if that's going to be permanent or not, but that's a possibility. You know, obviously the goal line and the red zone stuff, which have been pretty good all year, wasn't against Indiana. So in some ways, I think it's a blessing in disguise. And the game, yes, they wanted to win the Big Ten championship, of course. They don't like to lose. But if you're going to lose a game, that's probably the one to lose because it can give you the motivation. Say, okay, we're not invincible. We have to work at some stuff. And when you coast, which they have, the Texas game is competitive, and then the next 10 were not. Mm-hmm. And then even Michigan wasn't all that competitive. You know, and I would ask Ryan Day in press conferences, are you worried about complacency? And you haven't been tested, not facing adversity. And they finally faced it, and they failed. Okay. You know, they weren't far off from beating Indiana. I mean, if Jaden Fielding makes a 27-yard field goal, they probably go to overtime. I'm not sure that Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate were fully healthy for that game. I don't think they played the number of snaps they normally do. I think there were things from that game that they will take and say, okay, we have to learn from this. And I think they will. I still think they're the best team in the country. It doesn't mean they're going to win it. It's still tough to win 3 games in a row. And I think the first game they're going to play, Texas A&M or Miami, is going to be a challenge because either of those teams has a talent to play with Ohio State. I think Ohio State will be favored and should win, but it's not a gimme.
No, not at all. I'll get you out of here on this one. And again, the book is Buckeye Brotherhood. It is available now. Perfect gift for the holiday season. Bill Rabinowitz, our guest. Get you out of here on this one. Is there a behind-the-scenes character that we don't talk about enough big picture-wise, or maybe even not even a person? Maybe it's just something that is in the water up there that makes it a little bit different, that made last year possible, that makes this program kind of the model for what all others should strive for, that you learned about in the writing of this book?
Yeah, I think there is, I kind of hate these words that sound like corporate words, you know, like alignment and culture. Mm-hmm. I really, you know, I always kind of roll my eyes when I hear that most of the time, because, you know, every that's just so, that's such a cliche.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and you look at, you know, compare them to Michigan right now, right?
Right.
I mean, as dysfunctional as it gets, I mean, stuff is going on there and has gone on there for a long time that you go, oh my God, that's awful. Ohio State doesn't have that drama. You know, Ryan Day and Mickey Marotti and Mark Pantone are the three kind of pillars of the team. Ross Bjork has settled in well as the athletic director. They are, you know, rowing together. There doesn't seem to be friction or that kind of stuff that is, I think, much more common than most people realize because they don't get a peek behind the curtain. I don't get the sense that there's a lot of drama at Ohio State in terms of turf battles or just politics. I just think that they're a pretty non-dysfunctional program, which, you know, you don't hear that. I mean, it's hard to do. I mean, it's a behemoth of an organization, right? Ohio State football is a beast. And to have it kind of clicking for the most part, I'm sure there are things behind the scenes that happen. Of course there are. But, you know, they seem to be on the same page. And I think that's the key to it, that last year there was – the reason that meeting worked is because there was a foundation of trust and respect and love mm-hmm. between the players and even Day. And I think that enabled them to get through that. So that's what I would say. But obviously, some of it's just talent. Look, they've got Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs and Julian Sain and Carnell Tate and Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese. I mean, it helps them have better players. You know, that's a big part of it too.
Yeah. It is, buddy. Thank you so much for the time and sharing with us a little bit of your time today. And again, encourage everyone to read the book. Well, buy the book, Buckeye Brotherhood. It is out now for the holiday season. Thanks for your time, bud.
If I could mention that, I left the Dispatch in September. I'm now covering Ohio State the way I always have on Substack. So it's BillRabinowitz.substack.com.
Perfect. And of course, yes, great place to, and one of the best in the business, Bill. Thanks for your time, buddy.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, there he goes, Bill Rabinowitz, covering Ohio State football on the Substack, and of course the book Buckeye Brotherhood. Coming up next, the Steelers close in on the AFC North. We'll get into all of that and what was a wild weekend in the National Football League. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The sound of Paul Keels calling a Buckeye game is erotic.
Oh, yes.
Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Men, it's the
Atlas Beller has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
T-Bone and Tyvus are part of a balanced breakfast. Wake up with two dopes talking about football, and one of them laughs uncomfortably loud. T-Bone and Tyvus.
Sponsored by Awaken 180 Weight Loss.
Weekday mornings at 6 on The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Right Way Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
The friends are the guests and listeners. Reese and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Everybody, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, friends, it's your Uncle Bo here. Before you buy a diamond, and trust me on this one, go see my friends at Diamond Cellar. Not all jewelers are created equal, and for more than 78 years, Diamond Cellar has set the standard. Craftsmanship, service, value. Their in-house jewelers and gemologists work together to make sure every diamond is as brilliant as the person you love, all backed by their guaranteed best price. Don't just sell rings. They build relationships that last generations. This holiday, shop where I shop. Diamond Cellar, a true trusted jeweler. For over 7 decades, visit DiamondCellar.com. I got to get there Tuesday for a little pickup for the blonde. Don't worry, she doesn't even know I'm on the air right now. She'll never know anything. All right, we had Monday Night Football last night. It went as I think we expected it to go. Miami's record in cold weather games was like 0-ever. And so you knew that that was kind of the way it was going to go. This AFC North, the way that it's shaking out, the Steelers and Ravens play the last game of the season. Is that game in Pittsburgh?
It is.
I have that right. Yeah. The question is, can Baltimore get there unscathed? I have a pretty good chance. Right now, Pittsburgh has a one-game lead over Baltimore for the division, but Baltimore's stretch run here is a little bit more aggressive, I would say, than Pittsburgh's. They've got the Patriots, the Packers, and then the Steelers. So that is their three games to finish the stretch. I know Pittsburgh's got Detroit this weekend as they sit with that one-game lead, a desperate Lions team, of course. So they are at Detroit, and then they have the Browns and then the Ravens. So there's a win sitting out there in Cleveland on the 28th for Pittsburgh that I think it's fair to assign to Pittsburgh. I'm not sure where it's coming the other way, though, for Baltimore. There's none of those that are gimmies for them when you think about what Baltimore has left. And in order for that game, I saw some of the beat writers say, lock it in, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, last game of the season, flex Sunday Night Football. Well, Baltimore's got to get there within a game first.
And yeah, it's got to be winner gets the AFC North.
Yeah, because you're going to have that in the NFC South, by the way. Tampa Bay and Carolina. They're headed for that.
Those damn Saints.
Oh, thank God. I was watching with NBC, and it was a little bit of Jim Carrey and Dumb and Dumber when he eats the peppers and that kick goes in for New Orleans. And I'm sure I was the only person not from Charlotte or New Orleans who was watching that game. But I was pretty locked into it. So that gives me a chance. And they got a personal foul on it too that allowed for an even easier kick. Crazy last window in the NFL. The way that all kind of shook out with all of that. So, It's crazy. Like Pittsburgh wants to run Tomlin because I was talking with a Pittsburgh buddy of mine on Saturday night about this. He was like, he's got to go, the in-game stuff. Like, I'm like, dude, they win the division. They have a winning record every year. They're going to win the division again this year. And he's like, he goes, you sound like a Browns fan. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, we demand Super Bowls. And I'm like, you demand Super Bowls? Like, you don't have a quarterback. How the hell are you going to win the Super Bowl without a quarterback? You better go get one of those before you're going to do anything. But it's just their perception over there that it's time to move on. And I heard Roethlisberger kind of clarify his comments as well.
Saying, oh, he walked it back. Like,
well,
he backpedaled. I've seen him get out of those tricky situations before with the Cleveland Browns. Like,
yeah,
he meant what he said the first time. And then he realized that, well, Tomlin might actually make the playoffs. And if he does, well, I can't be too critical of the guy that's making the playoffs with the 42-year-old quarterback.
Yeah, that's kind of my read on it, too. It's pretty crazy where we stand right now, and we'll blitz the NFL coming up at 11 o'clock. But if the playoffs started right now, the 2-7 game in the AFC would be New England and Houston. That is a banger of a first-round game. The 3-6 would be Jacksonville and Buffalo. The 4-5 would be Pittsburgh and the Chargers, and then Denver would be the one. Denver just can't lose. They're immune to losing, and they're 12-2.
The way Jacksonville's been playing, that's a banger, too, if they play the
Bills.
You're
right. Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, it's funny. I saw a lot of people saying, like, Trevor Lawrence wrecked fantasy football playoffs this weekend. I can't imagine anybody played him.
That was Kyle Pitts that wrecked fantasy football playoffs.
That's right. Pitts out of nowhere. But how many people do you think had those two guys in their starting lineup?
Can't be many, that's for sure.
No, I don't think so. I think probably not. Neither one wrecked any of the playoffs that I was involved in, just because they weren't in starting lineups.
If you had picked up Trevor Lawrence at the beginning of the season in your fantasy football league, you are not probably making the playoffs.
No, and he's probably your backup. Honestly, he was probably your backup for much of the season. He probably wasn't your starter if you're one of those guys who carries backups. In the NFC, the Rams are the one. They would have the bye. They play Seattle Thursday in this one's for first place in the NFC game. Then the 2-7 is Chicago and Green Bay, but that seems to flip every single week. Chicago now back in the 2 spot after falling to the 7 with the loss, but they beat the Browns to go up to the 2. The 3-6 is Philly and San Francisco, and then the 4-5 right now is Tampa Bay and Seattle in the battle of former Carolina Panther quarterbacks who have made in the case of both of them, pretty good. So going to be a fun last 3 weeks in the National Football League. Speaking of the National Football League, will Joe Burrow play for another team before his NFL career is over? We will hit that, among other things, in the Real Truth. Second hour of the program coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The radio couldn't contain us, so we've taken over YouTube. Catch Morning Juice weekday mornings at 6 by searching 971 The Fan. Do it.
Listen to Financial.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Week 15 in the NFL wrapped up last night in Pittsburgh. The Steelers stopped the Dolphins 28-15. Aaron Rodgers threw 2 touchdowns in the win. It was the 23rd straight win for Pittsburgh on Monday Night Football. Steelers also gain a 1-game lead on the Ravens for the top spot in the AFC North. Both teams will meet Week 18 at Acrisure Stadium. In college football, Ohio State's got 15 days until the Cotton Bowl. Buckeyes will play either Miami or Texas A&M on New Year's Eve in Dallas. The Hurricanes will meet the Aggies this Saturday at noon in the first round of the CFP. The 15-day transfer portal window opens Friday, January 2nd. On Monday, Nebraska's Dylan Raiola announced he's entering the portal. Michigan State's Aiden Childs is also portal bound, along with Florida's DJ Lagway. And on the ice tonight at Nationwide, the Blue Jackets host the Anaheim Ducks at 7. Columbus looks to hold a 5-game slide, and it'll be the 600th NHL game for Zach Werenski. Here, Blue Jackets hockey Tuesday night at 6:30, right here on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
General Sherman marched through Georgia. He was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Tuesday. Uncle Dom coming up in 30 minutes. Time now for that Real Truth. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present The Real Truth.
Sponsored by Diamond Cellar. Over 76 years of experience and guaranteed lowest prices on Sawmill Road or DiamondCellar.com.
Real quick, just here's how wild the Trevor Lawrence thing is with fantasy football owners. Camo says he picked up Lawrence and played him. Now he's in the finals. John says he lost by 12 points in a league which he faced Lawrence. T-Law had 47 in the game he played him in. And then Dan says that Lawrence is on waivers in his league.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting. I guess there probably is. I always use Yahoo for fantasy. What do you guys use?
Last time I did it was ESPN.
I was mostly on ESPN, but now 3 of my leagues are on Yahoo. Trending that way.
I have one ESPN, and then the other one is Yahoo, and the one that I've been in forever is Yahoo. I wonder if... I'm going to pull it up really quick. I wonder if Lawrence... he's on a roster for sure. I just was curious if anybody played him last week. Let's see.
I lost to in my fantasy playoffs had Josh Allen, but okay. I didn't have to worry about that.
So he's the quarterback of the number 2 team. It's actually my opponent this week in the playoff. Ooh. And he's on his bench.
Who's his starter?
Bo Nix.
Oh.
Yeah. They play each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that could be a tough decision to make if they're playing each other.
They do. They play each other, yeah.
We'll start with a quarterback that's not going to be in the NFL postseason. Joe Burrow will play for another NFL team before his career is over. Is that the real truth?
I don't know how it's going to happen, but I am starting to think it is the real truth. His tone, his press conference last week, his post-game press conference on Sunday, and I can't imagine what this year has been like. I mean, they had all the hype. They kept all the guys, and they kept Higgins. They kept Chase. But to me, it feels like that Joe is realizing that they blew this window, that this window of we were in the Super Bowl a few years ago. We're in a window now to go win a Super Bowl championship. And through some of it, bad luck, injuries to him, some of it just negligence from ownership in terms of not bringing back some of those defensive players, and some of it probably just looking up at the stands and seeing snow covered bleachers and just going, what the hell is going on? This is the National Football League, for God's sakes. I think all of those things probably factor in a little bit, and I do think that this is the real truth, that he will play for another team. I don't know how it's going to happen. I hope it's not a situation. I hope he plays there his whole career. You know, you hope so. But at the same time, like, he strikes me as someone who's fed up. And I'm guessing you're going to see major changes down in Cincinnati to try to appease him, because he matters more than anything right now. But I think he's probably seeing those sands through the hourglass and realizing time is of the essence to get this thing sorted out in short order.
Well, I feel like with how we've seen Joe Flacco get reps with different teams and time there, and now Phillip Rivers, I think just long term like that, it's not out of the realm of possibility. I would love, as a Bengals fan, I would love to see him play his whole career there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But like you're mentioning, Bo, like it is like that window is closing. And I just don't know if it's going to be like, if his guys and Jamar and T end up not being there in the future, then that might be the straw that pulls them.
Do you think, from a Bengals fan perspective, isn't that the organization that the NFL private equity ruling is built for?
Yeah.
Like, sell 10% of that team and get somebody in there with some liquidity so that you can convert some of these, you know, contracts to guaranteed money and
yeah,
keep more. I mean, it just feels like they're built for it. And if not, I think they're going to blow this.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you've got like Joe Burrow, if they made the playoffs last year, he was going to be the MVP last year. Jamar Chase had one of the best years for a receiver that we've ever seen last year. And it's like, yeah, the pieces are there. And like, you would think you would have something there to build around, but they're just not, they're not really doing anything with it.
Penn State and Michigan will start 2026 in a better spot football-wise than they did 2025. Is that the real truth?
No. No. Not for either. Penn State started 2025, what, second in the country? So they're not going to be second in the country. I think Matt Campbell's got a mess on his hands, roster-wise. I don't know how. I think keeping the interim helps. Keep Terry Smith, that probably helps. Try to keep some of those guys in-house. Sounds like they're going to keep McSorley, too. So I think all of that helps. But who's quarterbacking Penn State? Who's running the ball for Penn State? Where are the weaponry? What did they have? Like the 150th ranked recruiting class? So it's not going to happen in that way. They'll be active in the portal. They'll try to be. But guess what? Everyone's going to be active in the portal. And Michigan, I don't even think we've begun to see how much devastation will be left in the wake of that, because we don't even have a situation where they haven't hired a new coach, so that portal hasn't opened yet. Just you wait until that portal opens in January, the one that's scheduled, and then when they finally name a head coach, there's going to be another 15-day window that opens up for all of those kids who signed in that class to go. I honestly think both these programs have a long road back. What I'm curious about, which one do you think has the bigger road back? Michigan or Penn State?
I think right now it's Michigan, with, like you just said, not having a head coach yet. Like, with the schedule that it is now, like, you've got to get someone in there. That's why Lane Kiffin went to LSU as early as he did, so he could get a head start on building a roster to compete right next year.
I think if we're talking about winning games on the football field, I would actually say right now it's Michigan.
They have further to go or less?
They have less row to hoe.
If they can keep Underwood.
If they keep Bryce Underwood, if they can keep most of this 2026 class, then I think it, because Penn State only signed two guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's going to look like once they hire, what's it, 5 days after the Matt Campbell stuff, then the portal opens for them. They've got the other window, what it looks like coming out of that. So January 17th, probably be a different answer to that question. But right now, I think it is Michigan. A 2026 recruiting title is the only thing Lincoln Riley's going to win at USC. Is that the real truth?
Well, he's going to win a lot of games. They had a pretty good year this year. There's a win here or there that if they get, they would be in the postseason. They didn't get him, and so it is what it is. But unfortunately for him, he plays in the Big Ten Conference. Unfortunately for him, I don't see a scenario where USC is a national title contender. I don't even know if a recruiting title matters that much anymore, because how many of those guys are going to end up being there long term? And we have more proof of that coming up in the following segment when we talk about the quarterback position and those that are available. So, yeah, I think this is the real truth. I think that is the only thing he's going to win at USC. But I don't necessarily know that that's a failure. I think for him now, if you're Lincoln Riley at USC, and you're looking at Penn State and Michigan, you're looking at that and you're going, okay, with a little bit of competency, we can be next year the third or fourth team in the Big Ten behind Ohio State and potentially Indiana, depending on what the Hoosiers do in the portal. But you have to keep Indiana at that level because Cignetti's done it 2 years in a row. So I'm assuming that Indiana's going to end up with Sam Levitt or DJ Legway or somebody like that to quarterback them, and they're going to be very, very good again next year. So if you're him, you're looking at this and you're like, hey, we can be top four in the Big Ten. That'll get us in the playoff. And I think that's success for USC now. I think the days of Pete Carroll and winning national titles are long gone. So I think if you're Riley and you're USC fan base, you're saying, let's be contenders in the Big Ten. Let's make the playoff. And that's a victory. But in terms of actual titles, banners, tangible things, Big Ten championships, national championships, no, I don't think that's coming for USC.
There should be no one more thankful than Lincoln Riley that the playoff is expanding. Mm-hmm. Because I think with that and with what Michigan and Penn State are looking like right now, yeah, it opens the door for them to be maybe a consistent playoff team for at least like the next 2 years. But yeah, not like a true threat to take the national championship or anything like that.
Did you guys talk about this yesterday, the kid at USC who re-signed, like his commitment to stay at USC? Like
it was a running back.
What are we doing?
Like Lenora Sellers did the same thing.
What is he signing?
Reaffirming.
Is it just like a photo op? We know those aren't binding. What is he signing? It's not a national letter of intent. Is the idea that it's an NIL package?
Oh, yeah.
I think so,
yeah. It's just an NIL. It's a marketing contract. And that has him playing at USC next season.
Those aren't binding, as we know, so because there's no way to police any of it. So, like, it's just a photo op, essentially.
Yeah, something to throw out there on social media and say, hey, yeah, we're doing good, guys. Everything is fine. Nothing to see here.
Wild.
It's where we're at. Finally, Bruce Thornton will be first or second team All Big Ten at the end of the basketball season. Is that the real truth?
He was really good on Saturday night.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing with that, and Rhyme Time, this is your wheelhouse, so I'm going to get out of the way and let you cook here for a second. But in order to be first team All Big Ten, your team's got to finish in the top four of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I think, and I don't think this Buckeye team's finishing in the top four of the Big Ten. So I think that'll keep him off first team, but it feels to me like he's a lock second team. He could be first team if they can crack that top four, or even five if they're within sniffing distance of it. I think he can crack it. He's going to be there, and obviously he's not the straw that stirs the drink. He's the straw, the drink, the cubes, the liquid, all of it for this Buckeye team.
Yeah, I'm trying to piece together who right now is looking like could be on first team, and I think Braden Smith at Purdue and Yaxel Lindeborg at Michigan are locks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got, like, if Thomas Lavavicic at Illinois will come through. Jeremy Fears at Michigan State's leading the country in assists, which is really impressive, and like he'll make a case. But I feel like even if Ohio State is outside of that top four, like if Bruce is leading the conference in scoring, mm-hmm, that might get him there. Because he's been on another level offensively this year. It's been ridiculous. So I think right now, I think he will be. Because like he's tracking to be an All-American, in my opinion, right now.
Yeah.
Averaging over 20 a game and on pace to shoot 60% from the field, 50% from three, and 90% from the free throw line. That's historic numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So if he can keep that up, I'm just worried that he might get too tired. And he might not be seeing the 20-point per game once we get into the heat of conference play. But that's right now, I will say that I think he will be first-team All-Big Ten.
Yeah, they're really dependent on him.
Yeah.
And he's been, I did not have that they would be this dependent on him, but they really are. He's the whole operation. They got Carolina on Saturday. cackling.
Why are you laughing at that?
And then, and then Grambling 2 days before Christmas and then the break, and then they're not back at it again until at Rutgers. So, that Carolina game Saturday, that's a 3:00 tip.
Yep.
Where's that game being played?
In Atlanta.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Why do they do that? Why do they think, why would it matter? From a TV perspective, it'd look prettier if it was in Chapel Hill or Columbus.
Yep. It's the rotation of the CBS Sports Classic, because before that is the Rick Pitino Bowl with St. John's against Kentucky.
And they're both down there?
Yep.
So it'll all be Big Blue Nation, even though they're having an awful season.
Yeah, they like to refer to that as Catlanta.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they have Nashville's like that too for them. Mm-hmm. Like they just, wherever they play, they're like Buckeye football. Speaking of football, if you go back and look at the top ranked recruits at the quarterback position in Julian Sayin's year, you see something that is more than a trend. We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Winners of the prestigious Platinum Microphone Award every year, given to the best radio station in the world. No need to look it up. It's real. The Fan.
Men, it's...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
All your favorite fan shows are on YouTube. Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bose sitting in his closet, Timmy Hall's gaudy gold chains, and Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Lots of sunshine in the forecast today and warmer with lighter winds as daytime highs get into the mid-30s. For tonight, partly cloudy to mostly cloudy skies with lows in the upper 20s, but we will have breezy winds, so there will be a bit of a wind chill. Continuing into Wednesday, however, Wednesday will have a mix of sun and clouds with highs getting up near 40. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
The two most mature people working at the radio station.
And that's just because they wear pants.
The pervert and the skivvies.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan. With friends like these.
Who needs former college football players?
This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is, and we're proudly brought to you by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for over 78 years. Buckeye Jewelry starting in just $99. Sawmill, Easton, check them out. They'll take care of you the way that they take care of me and have for so many years. If you go to 24/7 and you do the 2024 recruiting class and you look at the top quarterbacks on that list, they are as follows. Number one overall, DJ Legway out of Willis, Texas. He committed to the Florida Gators. Dylan Raiola, Buford, Georgia, by way of Arizona and God knows where else, Nebraska Cornhuskers. Julian Sayin, Carlsbad, California, Alabama Crimson Tide. Now, we know what happened to Julian. Nick Saban decided that he was going to go and hang up his whistle, and Julian took that opportunity to reassess. We had him on last week, and he talked about what he was looking for and found, obviously, all of it here. The other two, in the last couple of days, both hit the transfer portal. DJ Legway's 2 years in Gainesville, it's wild in retrospect that he chose to go there to begin with Napier and with all of that. They just haven't consistently been good there. I suppose this is why folks look at the Florida job and say that can still be a great job because you can still get the number one player in the country to go there, or the number one quarterback in this case. Jeremiah was the number one player, but number one quarterback in the country to go there. He enters the transfer portal. Yes, I did see Lane Kiffin retweeting that. Because of course he did. Is he interested in Legway? I'm sure he is. Could it also be just him trolling Florida? I'm sure that he would. It's everything that he's all about. Raiola's path is even crazier. His dad obviously played in the National Football League, and I even thought in the recruiting process, and remember originally he was committed here for a while, then flipped it to Georgia, then late flipped to Nebraska. They hired his uncle on the staff, and I'm sure they did a bunch of things NIL-wise. He started right away. He was actually really good here against Ohio State in the first half, I thought, in the game here his freshman year, his game we took the boys to. And I thought at times he showed certainly some of the things you're looking for. There's an odd quality to him in that it appears that he goes out of his way to mimic Patrick Mahomes in almost everything he does, but then complains about people comparing him to Mahomes, but yet he puts all of it on. So I don't know what to make of it. But both of those guys enter the portal yesterday. One of the things Raiola said in his decision to enter the portal was he's looking for some place to be developed. I would say that had you just stayed with either of the two places you were originally committed to, you probably would have gotten developed. If you had come to Ohio State, you'd probably be the starting quarterback right now, because I don't know if Ohio State would have went in the portal for Julian Sayin had Dylan already been here. Or if you had just stayed at Georgia, you probably would have been developed and you'd be in a position to be the starting quarterback next year at Georgia. But you wanted the immediate gratification. You wanted the paychecks and all the things that went with it. And so you go to Nebraska. And by the way, from the Nebraska perspective, you think the Cornhuskers want that contract extension for Matt Rule back?
Yes.
Like, man.
Absolutely.
What a mess. What a mess. So these two are both in. Sam Levitt's in the portal as well. And I think the one thing that is now a norm and will be even more of a norm going forward in college football in regard to the portal will be this. The high-priced quarterbacks will go in first. And then they will drive the market going forward. So Legway, Raiola, Levitt, they're going to be at the top of any list from a portal standpoint. And then everything else will kind of react to that. But it did strike me that the top three quarterbacks in this ranking from just 2 years ago are all going to be on different teams than they originally signed with.
Yeah, the Aaron Olin thing's kind of wild because Lenore Sillars is going back to South Carolina. So would that keep Nolan in Columbia for another season, or does he also find him? Yeah. I mean,
like, if you're his parent, isn't that what you're saying? Like, you're going to have to stick this out.
Man,
like, you made this decision. You can't go on this quarterback musical chairs again where you bounce somewhere else. Yeah, you're right. Nolan was the number seven player on the number seven quarterback in that year. Obviously originally signed here, then transferred to South Carolina. Thinking was Lenore Sellers would be done after this year at South Carolina. Then he repledged. So what do you do if you're Nolan?
I think his best shot would be transferring down, not to like a group of five, but to a lower level power five school and have a great year if you want to get to where you want to be, actually. Like, if you can go and have a strong year, then go back into the portal maybe, see if anybody is biting for you now.
I mean, Bo, you talk about...
he's not going to go start anywhere.
Yeah, no. It's such a wild thing when you bring up the parents, because I was reminded about Legend Bay, that Tennessee commit, who, once he turns 18 on Christmas, will probably be at Ohio State. Because Ryan
did he sign?
He signed with Tennessee, or at least his mom did, because... he's 17 at the time, so he could not sign the paper. So Tennessee took him with her signature on the thing, and everything that he has said since then is, I'm not going to remain committed to the Volunteers once I turn 18 on Christmas.
Oh, my.
So you talk about parents with these kids, and they're all over the place. Like, I don't know what kind of advice, you know, Dylan Raiola is getting from his parents. One of them played at Nebraska.
I mean, his dad's got to know better.
You would think.
Doesn't he? I mean, he's got to know better.
It'd be the funniest thing if Texas Tech gets in on Raiola. It'd be the absolute funniest thing in the world.
Mahomes lets him wear 15.
Unretires it.
If you're Raiola, there's no beating the allegations now if you go that way. Because, like, you can't complain about it if you're following where he went to school at.
But I will say this. Texas Tech would be a pretty great place to land if you're one of these portal backs.
Well, and Legway's from Texas, too. So there's... you're not going to Texas. You're not going to Texas A&M. Their quarterback situations are sorted out. Texas Tech is going to be wide open. Morton's gone, and so he'll be gone after this year. And so that one's wide open. So you could go back there in a hurry. It's funny. I was just curious, like, how many of these other guys in the top 10 are still with the place they signed from 2024. So Legway was number one. He originally signed with Florida. Now he's in the portal. Raiola was number two, originally signed with Nebraska. Now he's in the portal. Sayan was number three. He signs with Alabama, but of course he's here and a Heisman finalist. That worked out pretty well from him. Kid named Luke Kramahook was number four, the number four quarterback, originally signed with Florida State. He's now at Mississippi State after entering the portal last year. Walker White was number five. He originally signed with Auburn. He's now at Baylor. CJ Carr, well done. He remains at Notre Dame and is there. Aaron Noland was seven, started here, now at South Carolina. Then a local kid, Ethan Grunkenmeyer at Penn State. He was number eight. He's still there. Number nine's a kid named Jaden Davis, signed with Michigan. He's still there?
He actually just announced he's going to the portal.
Yep.
Okay.
Aiden and Childs is going to the portal, too.
Jeez, oh man. Ryan Puglisi is the other one. He was the last one in the top 10. He originally signed with Georgia. As of now, he's not in the portal. He's probably playing the long game there and realizing that he could be the starting quarterback of the Dogs next year. But I do think that the way that this portal is going to work going forward is these quarterbacks are going to be the ones that set the tone and set the table. And then everybody else will kind of go off of that. Legway's the one I would have. I mean, Levitt is ready to go. Like, You get Sam Levitt. He can Mendoza it. That's why, to me, like when I think about him, actually Brennan Sorsby's in too at Cincinnati.
That I think is one that Texas Tech, there's actual smoke there with Sorsby and Tech.
Sense.
I saw something the other day of Levitt to Oregon.
Well,
could be kind of fun.
Yeah, that would track. That would track as well. They're not. It's going to be the usual suspects in this thing.
At what point are you thinking to yourself, all right, we've got to stop every. Look, if Indiana could do it, I guess it doesn't matter, you know, whatever I say. But at some point, I feel like this would be tiring. I mean, the whole thing's exhausting.
It's exhausting. I think that's why you see, even in some instances, names that you would be surprised linked with NFL jobs. I think that's why you see it in college, because I think if any of these guys who had to be knee deep in the muck on this stuff on a 24/7, 365 basis, if the NFL ever asks about them, they have to go. They have to, because it's just, there's no fun in this lifestyle that they're currently living, but it's a loaded portal, and certainly at the quarterback position. We'll do a little Tuesdays with DeBerry in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Bishop and Friends present
Tuesdays with DeBerry.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
Cold enough for you?
This is not good. I am not a fan of this. I'm looking out the back Ponderosa here where I live, and the lake is covered in ice, and it's just snow everywhere. But what are you going to do? We're in December. We're going to, but it's going to be like 50 degrees later this week.
I know, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, I mean,
it's been a cold December, brother.
It's been very cold.
It's been cold. This is it. What do you remember a year ago at this time with Ohio State playing Tennessee? Because now we're going to sit it out. They're the two seeds, so you won't play again until you get to the Cotton Bowl against either A&M or Miami. But what do you remember about the advance of that game against Tennessee a year ago?
Well, I just remember that we were a little unsure. You know, Ryan was saying, hey, we can do it all. We can run the table. We can do this. And, you know, there was such chaos after the last year's Michigan game, and you're just wondering. And I just remember the way that the shoe was rocking that night. The fans were amazing. And I remember the way they took the field, and, Ryan left, the line came out, leave no doubt. Well, there was no doubt in that game. I mean, Ohio State dominated, and it was the beginning of certainly something special. And, you know, they did it a year ago. He had the magic. He had the formula. Hopefully they have the magic and formula again this year. I think they do. I still think, in my opinion, Bo, after watching as much football as I have, I think Ohio State is as talented as anyone in the country. I don't understand some of these awards, how they give them out and whatever. I mean, if Jeremiah Smith's not the best receiver in the country, I don't know who's voting on this.
I mean, who
saw that? I mean, did you even watch him play?
So they used to do that award ceremony down in Tallahassee, because Freddie played it's still presented by the Tallahassee Quarterback Club, because Freddie played at Florida State, of course. And so I remember talking to I interviewed him several times. I would always interview the last time I remember doing it. I want to say it was 03. It was Larry Fitzgerald won it. I think one of the things that they're always cognizant, like Marvin won it in 03. Is he the only Buckeye to win the Biletnikoff? Oh, no, no. Terry Glenn in 1995. So Terry Glenn in 95, and then Marv won it in 2003. Yeah, a bit of a shock there that he didn't win it over Mekhi Lemon, but he is being represented everywhere else. I mean, he's going to be a consensus All-American. There's going to be four of them that are going to end up being consensus All-Americans. And just, again, like, there's so many things that make Ohio State football work, but it starts with talent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question. I mean, you're getting the best talent in the country. And, you know, but I just think I looked at that and I just said, okay, whatever. And hopefully it serves as motivation to him. I mean, but all these awards, I mean, they ought to give them out at the end of the season when it's all over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I thought about that. I do worry as a Heisman voter that it just becomes the quarterback on the best team. And I understand that that's what Mendoza was this year. But then, for example, I don't think any scenario where Travis Hunter, he definitely doesn't win it last year. If it's after the postseason. And I think he was probably the rightful guy, but I do see your point on that. Let me ask you this. What is your favorite Christmas movie? What are the ones that you watch every year? And then what are the ones your grandbabies are most excited to watch?
Well, they want to see the new SpongeBob movie that's coming out at Christmas time. I think it's coming out Friday.
Yeah.
And I told them I'd take them. But for me, traditional Christmas movies, I love It's a Wonderful Life and then A Christmas Vacation.
So
Christmas
good.
Vacation, Cousin Eddie, absolutely amazing. I do enjoy Elf.
Yeah.
I know there was always a big debate in our sports department as to whether or not Will Ferrell was a good actor. You remember some of those debates?
I remember one person in particular was not a fan of Will Ferrell at all.
Moose said he was the same guy in every movie.
He did not like Will Ferrell, though.
No. I thought he was good in Elf. I did enjoy him in Ricky Bobby, but I do agree. He's kind of, in a lot of the movies, he is sometimes the same guy.
I think that's fair. I was in the halftime of the game last night. I watched a little bit of Step Brothers, and obviously not a Christmas movie, but that one holds up pretty good still. So I think Moose's point is pretty well on, though. That it's a variation.
And I did enjoy Step Brothers. That was pretty funny. Those two guys were just idiots. I mean, just idiots. Speaking of, you know, there's one thing you can be glad you're not.
What's that?
A Michigan fan right now.
Listen, we all heard the whispers with him. Everybody heard it. I always thought he was a patsy. You know, nobody saw all this coming, but I always thought he was hired. My assumption was he was hired for the reason that they didn't even do a coaching search. I always thought they hired him in case there was more crumbs that came from the Harbaugh mess, that he would be a very easy and convenient fall guy for whatever that was. Now, I didn't see what happened last week, but I always thought that he was always a patsy.
Well, my part is in, you know, I got the human element. I feel sorry for this man's wife and kids.
Of course, yeah.
It just breaks my heart. He obviously needs to get some help, but they need to do, you know, I've heard some of the rank and file up in Ann Arbor, some of the guys that didn't approve of the spying gate and all the stuff. And they're saying, we got to take, you know, I mean, it's embarrassing. The whole thing is embarrassing. And I give those guys credit for coming out and saying, wait a minute, you guys knew this was just, and they need to take a hard look at their program. And, you know, I'm one of the guys that said, we need a strong Michigan. We need a Michigan that, they've always been a very good program, but this is bad. The last few years have just been one embarrassment after another. And, but like I said, I feel bad for that man's wife and kids. That's just awful.
I think one thing that I learned here in the last couple of weeks, and I learned it at Penn State, and I think we're learning it at Michigan too, is in these, you know, in these college towns, these company towns, if you will, Dami, there's an old guard that holds on for dear life for power. And I think at Penn State, one thing that I learned with their search was I had no idea like how involved still Jay Paterno was in trying to revitalize his dad's legacy and trying to make all of that on the up and up. He's got a very he's on the board of trustees, for God's sakes, and he's got a really prominent, huge booster who's got his back on everything. And it's almost like he's warring with the other factions of the Penn State group, trying to decide who has the power of it. And I think the same is true a little bit in Michigan, where they have this. I mean, they made the deal with Harbaugh, right? I mean, they made the deal, and it's Danny Ocean in Ocean's 11. He won them all, and he got away with it, but he left carnage. And I think in order for that program, and I think the same with Penn State, in order to truly move on from all of it, you kind of have to get rid of those folks that have been around the program for so long.
Well, and in today's world, where we're talking about the professionalism of college football, you know, there's going to be even more eyes on you. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be even more, you know, with the world of NIL and the transfer portal and all that. I think you're 100% right. And that even calls for more regulation. That even calls for more of a super conference where you can regulate all this stuff. The days of doing it the way we did in the old days, those are long gone and are not coming back. Mm-mm. And, you know, the backroom deals, you know, you're going to be under scrutiny and everything. That stuff's not going to work today. And it's just, it's a sad state that we see some of these things. But I mean, that guy woke up to coach and spent 2 days in jail the next 2 days. It was insane. I mean, it was surreal, wasn't it?
Dummy, he was in a padded room.
I mean, it's just an insane.
In a white suit. Crazy.
I think he realized what had just happened. I mean, it just finally hit him, and it's just he needs help. And
he definitely does. I don't know how you could. He's a despicable human, though, too. Like the behavior, and the other part of it is, and again, I'm with you on the wife and the children and all of it. But like, how do you have enough time in the day to carry on like that? I mean, Ryan. There's no time for any of that.
I just don't understand. I said that the other day. You're in the midst of a football season and you're doing this kind of stuff. I don't understand it. I just don't. I don't know. And the fact that people saw it and turned their head, if that's mm-hmm. true, that's not acceptable.
No, it is not. All right, buddy. Good stuff. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for your time, buddy.
All right, brother. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll get to that a little bit of Tuesdays with DeBerry here on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do Thing or Not a Thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
This is the Daily Show with Coach Jake Diebler, brought to you by Encova Insurance. Again, the obligatory questions about Bruce Thornton and thinking about the West Virginia game. Jake, if you would just talk about his defense, especially late in the game.
Yeah, he had the task of guarding, you know, a really dynamic scorer who shoots a lot of threes and a lot of tough threes all game. And he really did a good job, made him inefficient. He hit some really, really tough shots end of the first half, end of the game. But I thought for the most part, Bruce did a good job and also carried an offensive load for us in overtime. That was really impressive.
Okay, we'll have another comment in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Archie Griffin, 2-time Heisman Trophy winner. The right coverage can be a game changer, both on and off the court. That's why Encova Insurance and their local independent agents are prepared for what's next and protect what matters most to you. Whether that's your home, car, business, or family, Encova's got your back with a policy that fits you perfectly. With local independent agents in your neighborhood and innovative insurance products that can be tailored to fit your unique needs, Encova's playbook is an easy win for your peace of mind. Basketball is full of challenging shots, and life can be too. With Encova, you don't have to do it alone. Your expert agent will guide you and provide insurance solutions so you can confidently manage your risk and count on a financially secure future. For auto, home, and business insurance, you want Encova on your team. Visit Encova.com today to find an agent near you. Encova is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Go Bucks!
At Ohio State, we are the Never Afraid to Innovate teams and the Improve People's Lives teams. Together, we are the Ohio State University.
This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center,
the team physicians for Ohio State athletics.
Jake, in talking about Bruce Thornton, not just the last basket he made, but so many others, is that where his strength is really such a big factor in what he's able to do?
Yeah, I think certainly the physicality he plays with and his ability to take contact and still focus on, you know, the shot is impressive. But, you know, also what makes it really impressive is his conditioning level and how he's able to play at such a high level for, you know, the entirety of the game is really impressive.
And I know we talked about it last week, but trying to find minutes to get him off the court, you had him off for a minute. Certainly that's got to be a challenge.
Yeah, it is. But he's built for it. I think, you know, the West Virginia game was unique because of some of the foul trouble we had, and we were able to get some extended breaks during timeouts and things that maybe made it a little less necessary to sub him out. That's what we're constantly monitoring, is, you know, how many breaks he can get when play is stopped. And then he and I communicate throughout the game, and he was feeling good, so I was feeling good as far as keeping him out there.
Good. This is the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Tis the season to be hungry at Roosters. That's why for every $50 spent on Roosters gift cards, you'll receive a $10 Rooster Buck back in your stocking. May your holidays be filled with friends and family, love and laughter, and of course, Roosters Wings. Go to roosterswings.com today or drop by any Roosters location to purchase your $50 holiday gift cards and receive a $10 Rooster Buck in return. Happy holidays from all of us at Roosters. Roosters, a fun casual joint.
Toyota Thon is on, and there's no better way to get in the spirit of the season than with a new Toyota, like the best-selling Toyota Camry. Now through January 5th, get 4.75 APR financing on remaining new 25 Camrys, or lease a new 26 Camry LE for $269 a month for 39 months with $36.99 due at signing. With approved credit through TFS, tax, title, and license extra, call 1-888-36-TOYOTA for details, or go to toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Hey, I'm
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Saw this in the break from Bruce Feldman. 20 quarterbacks were invited to the Elite 11 in 2023. 13 have either transferred or have already landed in the portal. That's a lot. Time for a little thing or not a thing. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So along with college football, Fox also does college basketball. Mm-hmm. Gus Johnson calls a great many regular season basketball games for Fox. His partner on Big Noon Kick, Joel Klatt, joined the Next Round podcast earlier this week and dropped the worst take ever on Cinderella and the college football playoff.
The reason the Group of Five is included in this playoff is to avoid antitrust litigation. That's it, guys. Like, we're not looking for a Cinderella. Nobody cares in football about James Madison or you know, the equivalent of George Mason going. Didn't George Mason go to the Final Four or
they
something
did,
like
yes.
that? Nobody cares in football about that. We don't want Cinderellas. We want the best teams playing each other at the end. In fact, hot take. I mean, like, the hottest of all takes that I've ever had in my entire life. The NCAA basketball tournament is a joke. It's the dumbest tournament and the least fair tournament in all of sports. We go and we put teams at odd times on neutral sites in a one game affair. Like, that doesn't crown a true champion. We're not doing anything that tells us who's the best team over the course of the entire season.
Thing or not a thing.
So he's partially right. He's mostly wrong, but he's partially right. So the thing that he got right is the NCAA men's basketball tournament rarely crowns the best team. because that's not the objective. The objective is not to crown the best team. The objective is to survive. And the reason survive in advance is in it's in the marketing. Survive in advance. That's part of it. There are a great many instances where the best team does not win the NCAA men's basketball tournament. In fact, rarely does the number one overall seed handle its business all the way through. There are all sorts of examples of undefeated teams. Kentucky more than a decade ago, UNLV all the way back in the early 90s that were clearly the best team. And if they played another team 10 times, they would have won 9 of them. But on that given Saturday night or Thursday night or Friday night or afternoon or whatever, they lost and the shots didn't fall. So that part he got right. What he got wrong was saying that it's not the best sporting event, because it is the best sporting event, and that is because of Cinderella. Now, the thing about Cinderella is we do want the slipper to not fit by a round regional final. I do, at least. I don't have an interest in George Mason in the Final Four. I want blue bloods or great teams in the Final Four. That's what I want to see, but I like Cinderella all the way through. So I get where he's going with it. But he lost me when he talked about how it's not a good, whatever he said there when he was talking about it's not a good sporting event. I mean, that's utter nonsense.
The thing that fires me up about this is him saying, like, we don't always get the best teams in the end, which to your point, Bo, is true. Like, we're not getting the top overall seed. But weren't there just 4-1 seeds in the Final Four last year?
Yeah.
And
yeah, it happens.
2-1s played for a national championship. Like, 18 of the last 25 champions have been one seeds. Mm-hmm. And in 14 of the last 25 games, it's been a one seed against a 1, 2, or 3. So that's still a top 12 team that could have been maybe in the top 5 at one point in the year. And then they just stumbled a little bit, dropped down to the 3 line. And, like, there was an 8 seed that won the college football playoff last year with Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, on paper, Ohio State was probably the best team in the country, but they were still an 8 seed, and they played a 7 seed. So you still weren't getting the top two teams in the bracket last year.
Did you just make Ohio State a Cinderella?
No.
Yeah. Spunky Ohio State.
Just the little Buckeyes?
Yes.
Little engine that could?
Yes.
Trying to find a way to overcome all the odds?
But I think
your point is well taken, though. Your point's well taken.
I think they were the best team, but there was an 8 next to their name last year.
Look, anytime it's a one-off, you're not guaranteed to get the best teams. That's why if you're looking for the best team, like if that's really what you want, provided everybody's healthy, it's really like a 7-game series.
Mm-hmm.
Like the NBA gives you the best team. It is very rare. You go back 50 years in the NBA. It's very rare that the best team doesn't win the NBA championship unless there is something cataclysmic in terms of injury. That's kind of the only way where you get upsets in the NBA finals is if there's some sort of crazy injury that happens. Otherwise, it's usually the best team that wins it.
Like the Dallas Mavericks against the Miami Heat.
There's 2 Pistons titles where the Lakers were decimated, one in 88 and another, 89, and then another one when Kobe and Shaq and all those guys were out in the early 2000s. So, like, those type of instances. But other than that, it's usually the best teams win it.
You could maybe say the Warriors when Durant got hurt in the finals.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
Dana Russini of The Athletic reported over the weekend that the New York Giants have a list of candidates for their head coaching vacancy. I'm told the names on it include Green Bay Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley, Colts defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo, Commanders offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury, Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak, and Notre Dame coach Marcus Freeman. Russini says to expect Freeman to garner interest from other NFL organizations. Last December, the 39-year-old Freeman agreed to a lucrative contract extension at Notre Dame through 2030. Thing or not a thing?
Well, I think this is a massive thing, and I think this is why Pete Bavakwa had the tone in the press conference he had last week about how much he loves Freeman, how much he loves everything that he's done. I'm sure the NFL is already sniffing around Marcus Freeman. That doesn't surprise me at all. He's a leader of men. I'm sure you look at him and you go, well, that's somebody that guys can follow. I think this is something you're going to have to contend with in a very, very big way this offseason at Notre Dame.
I think that's the only way Marcus Freeman would leave. I don't ever see him leaving Notre Dame unless he gets fired. So, like, that'd be the only pathway then for his next head coaching job. And I don't know why he would want to leave Notre Dame, too.
Lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a tough It's tough. Like, college athletics right now is really it. They get compensated well, but it is an up-at-dawn siege, and it never stops.
Speaking of college athletics, the CEO of On3, Shannon Terry, had four quick takes after a visit to the Sports Business Journal's conference in Las Vegas last week. He says, wealthy donors who drove early NIL roster value deals for athletes are growing tired at a record rate. Always thought to be a bridge, but donors are over it. Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti's stock is sliding over his handling of and lack of transparency in that private equity deal. Collective bargaining went from almost no chance now to a real possibility. He adds it's becoming more of a how to do it versus how it should be done. And then finally, private equity isn't going away. PE will remain the top storyline in the business of college sports in 2026. Thing or not a thing?
Reese, I think I did my first shows with you probably like 2015 or 16, something like that, I would say.
Yeah.
Up in Cleveland. I would say that that you probably have, a bonus or not, you've had to listen to me drone on about this stuff a lot through the years as much as anybody. The amount of times that I have said the only thing that's going to stop NIL is when wealthy people get sick of not getting ROI, and the amount of times that I've said just collectively bargain it, just privatize it, just follow the NFL model over the last decade, I can't even count. Of course, this is inevitably where it was going to get to, but the reason it took so long is because everybody, there were no adults in the room that wanted to call it what it is, and so they kept putting band-aids on hemorrhages, and now you're at the point where you have a full-on change that has to be made for this to continue on. This was always going to be the way it played out. So not a thing, because I've been saying all of this stuff for a decade. Petitti stuff I've been on for over a year. The incompetency of that guy.
I just give a lot of credit to these coaches trying to balance all this.
Like, it's a mess.
It cannot be easy. And like, now I understand why the likes of like Nick Saban, Roy Williams, Coach K got out when they did, because
yeah,
this is impossible, it feels like, to handle.
No, there's no guardrails for any of it. So it's just completely lawless. We'll blitz the NFL coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Common man, a radio veteran, has a large hemorrhoid. Timmy Hall, a good clean boy. Moonlight, Sandman's hemorrhoid. Common man and Timmy.
Weekdays at 3.
The Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. The Blue Jackets are back at Nationwide tonight, looking to halt a 5-game slide. CBJ will host the Anaheim Ducks at 7 p.m. It'll be the 600th career game for Zach Werenski. You can hear Jackets Ducks on The Fan with pregame coverage at 6:30. Jet Greaves looks to get the nod in net Tuesday. CBJ will host the Wild on Thursday. In the NFL last night, the Steelers beat the Dolphins 28-15 for their 23rd straight Monday Night Football win. That gives them a game lead on Baltimore for the top spot in the AFC North as well. In other news, Patrick Mahomes underwent surgery yesterday to repair a torn ACL in his left leg. Mahomes will likely miss the start of the 2026 season. In college football, Ohio State's got 15 days until the Cotton Bowl quarterfinal. Buckeyes will play either Miami or Texas A&M on New Year's Eve in Dallas. This update is sponsored by Roosters. For every $50 you spend in Roosters gift cards this holiday season, you'll receive a $10 Roosters bonus buck. Available at Roosters locations or online at roosterswings.com.
Bo knows many people.
To the interesting ones on this show.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Tuesday edition. Aaron Portsline going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We had booked Porty before the news today out of Buffalo that Jarmo Kekäläinen will be the new general manager of the Buffalo Sabres. So we'll ask him a little bit about all of that and the current status of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Here's a hint, not good. Time to blitz the NFL. Hit it, guys.
Bishop and Friends present NFL Blitz.
Sponsored by Monogram Homes. Go custom. Go Monogram. Visit monogramhomes.net to start building.
All right, I believe I had that. What did you have, Reese?
Well, I was 10-6 this week, so a great many things. Here's hoping I can get at or above 500 with picks in week 16. But to week 15, I had the Eagles bouncing back. I had... I thought it was ridiculous. I mean, the conversation that we have about quarterbacks in general, like the royal we, is insane. Yeah. And the Jalen Hurts stuff, like, he has his struggles through the season, but look around you, look around the league at the insanity at this quarterback spot with Phillip Rivers throwing touchdown passes this past Sunday. you have a, I think, a really good quarterback in Jalen Hurts for the Philadelphia Eagles. Is he great? I don't think so. But he's good enough, certainly, with the talent around him that you've done in terms of drafting and developing and getting out of free agency. That team can win a Super Bowl still.
I just feel like, what does it take to make that fan base happy? Like, they just won the Super Bowl. They've won two in the last decade.
Yeah.
They played in three? Like, good grief. What are you
Pennsylvanians, man.
Come on, man. Rhymes, what did you have?
I had Drake May and Josh Allen giving us an instant classic. And I think when they met in Buffalo earlier in the season and the Patriots came away with that win, everyone was like, oh, okay, are the Patriots for real? And then they just kept continuing to rise. And now here come the Bills looking to contend a little bit too. And now they're very much in the race for the division, taking this one. And yeah, the Patriots getting up 21-0. Josh Allen and the Bills come roaring back, especially after Josh Allen threw up a little bit on the sidelines. But yeah, that game was fun.
Yeah, another one that was fun was the LA Rams. And I've been on them all season long, and they've been my favorite team in the NFC all season long. And that was one on Sunday that Detroit came ready to go. They came ready to go. And the Rams weathered it, handled it, and then took care of business and inevitably won the game and will now set up a Thursday night, or this Thursday, which is for the NFC top seed is what's at stake this Thursday between them and Seattle. But they're good. They can win the Super Bowl. They have everything that you need. I know they're banged up a little bit now with Adams, but I think they'll be fine long term. What didn't you have, Reese?
The New Orleans Saints had no business beating the greatest team on God's green.
Oh my God, thank God.
Like, what are we doing, Tyler Shook?
Didn't they sweep the Panthers?
That's the season sweep. I think you're right.
The Panthers beat the Rams and lost to the Saints twice. Yeah.
I didn't have it being the year 2025 and seeing a quad box that featured Phillip Rivers, Tom Brady, Tony Romo, and Drew Brees, and Phillip Rivers was the one wearing the jersey.
That's pretty good.
You've got the quad of the three color analysts. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Tony Romo, and then, yeah, getting ready for Seattle and Indianapolis with Phillip Rivers on the under center.
Just crazy. I'll tell you what I didn't have. I didn't have an AFC postseason, and this isn't official yet, but it's looking like it, with no Mahomes, no Lamar, and no Burrow. I mean, this is...
All right, Josh Allen.
Yeah, you're the last one standing, and it's your turn to go take care of business on this thing, because this is the first time I saw yesterday, the first time since 1998, that either Brady, Manning, or Mahomes will not be representing the AFC in the Super Bowl, or in the playoffs, rather, that one of them's not in the postseason, which is just a stupefying stat that's been that long. But we talked about this a couple weeks ago. A true changing of the guard of the AFC happened this year. It was going to happen whether Mahomes got hurt or not, because they were a mess and have been a mess for a while. We'll see if Lamar can find a way to scratch and claw. The only way is going to be through the division, so they're going to have to beat some teams they're not supposed to the next couple of weeks to be able to do that. But right now, it looks like an AFC playoff without any of those guys. I did not have that. Player who impressed? Who do you got, Reese?
I got most of my eyes on Caleb Williams Sunday, because, man, he torched the Browns. He's really good. Like, I think Ben Johnson's unlocked something in him, and that Chicago Bears squad will probably win the NFC North.
Feels like it, yeah.
How about our guy, Travion Henderson?
Mm-hmm. Had two
house calls in that game. I wish they would have won now because of that. But he had 14 carries for 148 yards, and then the two long touchdowns. Awesome game from him.
Just wonder, like, did it take, like, if Ramondre Stevenson doesn't ever get hurt, does Vrabel ever play him? Why did it take
not?
That long?
Yeah,
like, good Lord, man, like, electric, dude. It's Phillip Rivers. I mean, that's like me going out there. I mean, not, but you know
he
what
might
I mean.
Have 15
like,
pounds on you.
He had like, it was crazy.
He looked like he was getting ready to be a coach.
It's nuts. And it was so cool. Like, you know, his high school team watching it, and they damn near won it. They really almost won it. They kicked a field goal that you thought, good Lord, he did it. He went to Seattle and beat that team. There was a sack where he just kind of fell down because his body doesn't move the way that it wants to. It reminded me when I sometimes decide that I'm going to jump in on a drill with the sixth graders and show them how to do something. I'm like, oh, my body doesn't move like that anymore. It was just stupefying that he was able to do that. And he's going to start again this week, which is great. Player who disappointed, Reese, who do you got?
It's players, and it's the New England Patriots. He blew a 21-point lead, Josh Allen and the Bills.
We're just all over that game right
what
now.
What are you doing? Like, that was New England's chance to really solidify the AFC East. And now here come the damn Buffalo Bills.
Yep. 2 weeks in a row, Buffalo did that. They did it against Cincinnati, too. Chased it down.
I would go players as well with the Dallas Cowboys, and this is, I guess, from a fantasy standpoint, because I really needed George Pickens to have a good game. And it just felt like every time the Cowboys got in the red zone, they just stopped passing the ball. And they just tried to run it every time. And I'm like, you have CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens. Throw it to them. But then you're also giving up 34 points to J.J. McCarthy on defense, which isn't great, especially when you really needed this game to kind of stay in the hunt for a playoff spot.
That sounded very much like the Ohio State conversations we have. You have Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith. Why are they not on the field?
Yeah.
Keep them out there.
Exactly.
This is one of the most stupefying stat lines I've seen from a quarterback in the National Football League who has a winning record have. The stat line is 15 of 25, okay, for 64 yards, 2.6 an attempt, 0 touchdowns, 1 interception. Because of the 4 sacks that this player incurred, his passing, the team's passing numbers for the game were 29. That was Kenny Pickett against Philly. Wow. I thought he'd play well. I thought he'd at least be competent. That was a mess. Vegas is an absolute disaster mess. Bud Kilmer, honorary coach of the week. Who do you got,
Reese? Well, I'm going to give it to Pete Carroll of Las Vegas, who does not think there's heat on his seat. Good for you, Pete, because I don't know. You're 2-12.
What a mess. Yeah, he was saying like he was proud of the effort.
Yep. Thrilled with his guys, thrilled with the job that they've been doing.
I mean, I went to state school, but by my count, so if they have 20, by my count, they had 93 yards of total offense. Oh, no, not even. Not even nine. No,
less 75.
Than 75 yards of total offense.
But he's fine.
Math wasn't
but
right.
He's fine.
Wow.
You know.
What an absolute mess. What do you got for Kilmer Rhymes?
I've got D'Amico Ryans for the Texans winning 6 straight games, and they look like a team you do not want to face in the playoffs right now. With that defense, CJ Stroud is back, and he's got his guys outside healthy. I don't know if you're one of those teams that win the division. I don't know if you want to face them right now.
I've gone this way a couple of times, and every week I think, well, this is the week that they lose, and they never lose. They just keep winning and winning and winning. It's Sean Payton. I thought that they would lose at home to Green Bay. They did not lose at home. That game was there for the taking. Patrick Surtain made an interception on Jordan Love that was just an all-time play where he just kind of tracked him and went over the top and made the interception on a ball intended for Christian Watson. It was a crazy sliding doors moment, and Watson gets hurt, and the rest is history. But they haven't lost since week 3. Bo Nix, the completion percentage isn't great, just 60, right, a little less than 64%. He's thrown some more interceptions, but they're making it work, and they're winning in a bunch of different ways. Like, their running backs are J.K. Dobbins and R.J. Harvey, but it's the defense. The defense is unbelievable. They're opportunistic offensively, and they just really know how to win, and they have to be taken seriously because, quite honestly, they just don't lose. Top 3 teams right now. Who do you got, Reese?
I got Rams, Broncos, Seahawks.
Okay.
Yep, I've got that too. Rams, Seahawks, then Broncos. They just don't lose, like you said, Bo.
Yeah, Rams and Broncos are in there for sure. I'm going to go Buffalo over Seattle. Buffalo coming back like that against New England is an attention getter. That is a champion's intestinal fortitude to come back like that in a game that you had to have. And to do it 2 weeks in a row. They're a game back in the division. Can they track down New England? All right. Next 3 for Buffalo are at Browns, Eagles, and Jets. Okay. Well, that's pretty navigable from their perspective. Who does New England have left? New England finishes with Ravens, Jets, and Dolphins. Okay. So the answer is no.
Jeez.
They can't track them down. So they're going to be the wild card team. But they're going to be... they're going to be a team to contend with for sure. Super Bowl right now. Who do you got, Reese?
I got Rams and Buffalo.
Yeah.
Damn Bills.
Yeah. I'm going Seahawks and Buffalo just because, like, it's, yeah, Mahomes is out. Lamar's likely going to miss the playoffs. If not now, when is it, Josh Allen?
Yeah, I kind of feel that way. I got Rams and Bills, and it's a little bit like the NBA's Eastern Conference right now, and I know the Cavs are having a big-time struggle bus right now, but it's kind of like if you don't win the East now without Tatum, without Halliburton, like, when do you do it? Mm-hmm. Like, it has to be now.
No Joe Burrow.
Right. That's how I feel about with Allen. Like, he doesn't have to go through Burrow. He's probably not going to have to go through Lamar. He definitely doesn't have to go through Mahomes. Like, he's the most feared ultimate weapon left in the AFC. If not now, when? And by the way, I would love a Bills-Rams Super Bowl. I'd be rooting for the Rams or the Bills, even though I like the Rams a lot. I'd be rooting for the Bills. I cannot imagine what that city would do if they actually won the Super Bowl. Think about this, guys, from the Rams side of it. One quick aside. Think of the legacy play for Stafford here. If he wins his first MVP as the oldest player to ever win the MVP, and he's the favorite right now. I don't know if he's the betting favorite, but he ought to be. So he could win his first MVP at this point in his life. If he gets a second Super Bowl, you want to talk about changing the trajectory of how you're viewed? Because statistically, it's all there for him because he threw for 50 million yards when he was in Detroit. So all he needs is a few more of those accolades. He gets an MVP and a Super Bowl. He starts getting into greatest quarterbacks of all time type talk. Not at the top, but he's in that mix.
So FanDuel's got him -260 to win the MVP. Drake May +380. Josh Allen +600. Bo Nix and Sam Darnold with Trevor Lawrence +10,000.
Yeah, it's there for him to do it. And that hardware, I mean, that gold jacket's now locked in. I think it was anyway, but now it's definitely locked in. And now it's a very different conversation around Matthew Stafford if he can get those two things done. Speaking of the NFL playoffs, it will once again happen without any teams representing the state of Ohio. How are we going to define success for these two teams going forward? That's ex-Bishop and Fred's right here, the Fan.
Wake up with the Fan, eat lunch with the Fan, go to bed with the Fan, dream about the Fan, then change your sheets. Gross.
Ew, you guys are gross, but stick around in case I don't find anyone else.
The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Jackets are back at Nationwide for a battle with the Ducks. Live fan coverage starts Tuesday night at 6:30.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating and Cooling.
Proud to be your flagship home of the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Lots of sunshine in the forecast today and warmer with lighter winds as daytime highs get into the mid-30s. For tonight, partly cloudy to mostly cloudy skies with lows in the upper 20s, but we will have breezy winds, so there will be a bit of a wind chill. Continuing into Wednesday, however, Wednesday will have a mix of sun and clouds with highs getting up near 40. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
If you haven't thought about Buckeye football today, I'm sorry to tell you that you're dead. Our condolences. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is. Get ready to play, win, and celebrate big at Eldorado Scioto Downs, your ultimate Caesars Rewards destination. With Caesars Rewards, you're going to earn rewards every time you play, stay, dine, or shop. Not just here, but over 50 Caesars Rewards destinations across the country. From unforgettable getaways to incredible culinary experiences, members enjoy exclusive perks and benefits that make every visit worth it. At Scioto Downs, the excitement is nonstop. Take your pick. More than 1,700 of the hottest new games. Sip on award-winning craft brews at the Brew Brothers Microbrewery. Or dive into Guy Fieri's Trattoria, home of the out-of-bounds 68-layer lasagna. And the energy just keeps building. Scioto Downs has been chosen to host the prestigious Breeders' Crown in 2026, featuring 12 championship races. It's one of the biggest events in harness racing. It's coming right here to town. So come experience the action, the rewards, the unforgettable moments that are waiting for you at Eldorado Scioto Downs, a Caesars Rewards destination where the rewards never stop. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Gambling problem, call 1-800-589-9966. Visit caesars.com/Scioto Downs for details. How do we define success for the two Ohio teams in the National Football League here in the last three games of the season? I think that is actually a pretty easy question. The reality is you can't. There really isn't success here the rest of the way. But I think the thing, especially in Cleveland, is how can you properly identify and evaluate Shedeur Sanders as the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns long term. To me, that's what matters here over the last three games for them. And it's Buffalo, which is a massive test, Pittsburgh, massive test, and then Cincinnati. That's the last three for the Cleveland Browns. And I think we're at the point now where there are two things from a Browns perspective that really matter. Number one, Myles Garrett, get the sack record. You've been extraordinary. You've done so playing fewer plays than anybody else who tracked this thing down. Go win the thing. And by the way, the reason he's playing fewer plays is because his team is consistently behind and he's not able to get up the field and rush the passer because oftentimes in the third and fourth quarter, teams aren't throwing the ball. They're running it. And so that is number one in terms of instant gratification. Big picture. And the more important thing is, do you have to address quarterback in the offseason? As it stands right now, the Browns will have three quarterbacks on their active roster for next season: Deshaun Watson, Shedeur Sanders, and Dylan Gabriel. Sanders has been given this long runway here to kind of prove what he's capable of. Here is Kevin Stefanski yesterday on how Shedeur played in a loss to Chicago.
Yeah, obviously some good throws down the field, made some explosive plays. There's definitely plays that he wants back that he can be better, whether it's a decision or a ball or those type of things. But I thought he fought till the end and has the right attitude that he'll just keep learning from all of these experiences.
I'll pose it to you two. Can you evaluate him amidst this?
Not fairly. That ball to Jerry Jeudy, though, I was the Leonardo DiCaprio gif where he just pointing him like that. That's the NFL throw.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Jeudy did somehow cosmically ended up in the defensive back's hands, mm-hmm. but he put it on him in the place that's the only spot, like, for the quarterback in a professional setting needs to put it. And from that and the highs that he has shown me over the past couple weeks, I'm like, there's enough there for me. If they properly address offensive concerns on the line and the talent around him, I think you can give it a fair shake next season. But there's enough I've already seen from Shedeur, and I think the next 3 weeks might help mm-hmm. that you can go into next year with at least him on that roster in that room.
I'm with you, Reese. He has shown really good signs, and we've mentioned how there's mock drafts out there of them drafting Carnell Tate, and I think if you put the right pieces around him that can actually help him a little bit, then it could be something nice.
It would be more than something nice. It'd be a lottery ticket if they believe in him going forward and want him to be the starting quarterback, because to your point, their needs offensively are plentiful. I could see them going receiver, tackle.
Great.
Next year in the draft. And I think they might have to. Their entire offensive line has to be rebuilt in one off season. Their entire receiver room has to be rebuilt in one off season. I think Isaiah Bond is a really nice player. He actually gets behind the defense more than even you realize. He was behind it a couple of times yesterday where they didn't connect. He did have the two long ones with Shedeur. I think the next step for Shedeur is the kid throws a beautiful sideline go. Like, he throws that ball and he puts it on the screws. He likes throwing the ball deep down the field and having success with it. The next thing for him is going to be, can he operate in structure to a spot, hit it there, and in a more traditional NFL offense? And if the answer to that is no, is his talent such that you would build an entire offense around what he does well? That's the decision you have to make if you're the Cleveland Browns. Can he run a traditional offense where the ball comes out quick and it's in space and away you go? Or is he somebody that you have to kind of build completely around, like the Bills did with Josh Allen? They found his skill set. They built an offense completely around it. Baltimore did this with Lamar Jackson as well. And I think that's the key with Shedeur. Hell, the Browns tried to do it with Deshaun Watson. It didn't work, but that's why they hired Ken Dorsey, was to bring somebody in there to build an offense around what Deshaun Watson does well. The other thing, just from a bookkeeping perspective, you have three quarterbacks on the active roster for next year right now. Are you really going to draft a fourth?
Yeah, no.
And go through all that again?
It would just, with everything that they need, I don't even know if they're there to say what kind of offense do we want around our quarterback yet. I just think they need to acquire more talent. They need to acquire young talent. That then they can start to have that molding conversation probably this time next year. But I look at a mock draft from Tankathon, and they have Dante Moore going to the Browns fourth overall. And I say, please stay away from a quarterback in the first three rounds. If you want to bring in a guy late, fine. I don't see why you would. I think the route that we've discussed on this show is you find a veteran, you bring him in, and then you see if Shador and veteran can compete for quarterback one. I'd be okay because Dylan Gabriel's a third round pick, so you're not going to jettison him anytime soon. He's your backup.
Yeah, I think the only pushback I would have for you, and I'm not arrogant enough to know about quarterbacks coming out of college to the NFL, but the only pushback I would have is if you get through the evaluation and you're looking at Dante Moore and you're like, this isn't a reach. He is this good. He is CJ Stroud. He is whomever. In those scenarios, then you take the quarterback and you deal with it. If you believe one, you have to be true to your process. If you believe one is a true blue franchise quarterback, you take them because you just are never know when you're going to be in these circumstances again.
Yeah.
And I understand the jokes about how the Browns pick at the top of the draft a lot. Well, they don't. When you pick number one, then you get your guy. And if the Browns were picking number one last year, they would have taken Cam Ward number one. So that's the thing where you have to, when you're in that spot, you have to take full advantage of it. But look, it's three more games to evaluate him and you do the best you can with it, but he's getting a lot of valuable reps and you ought to have a pretty good view and feel of what he is by the time you get to that time, where it comes to the combine and free agency and all of it. For the Bengals, I have no idea. I really don't know where they go from here. Because of the way that ownership kind of goes about their business, it's hard for me to find a scenario where they're going to be anything different next year. I mean, Burrow will play. He'll be healthy, but their defense is still a mess. It feels like Joe is completely fed up with all of it. Zach Taylor was available yesterday and was asked about Burrow and some of the comments Joe made Sunday after the loss to Baltimore.
We break down the film pretty thoroughly with all these guys, and I think it's good to see your leaders take ownership for their performance. That's critical for us to continue to progress as guys taking accountability for it. And so I was proud that Joe did that. That wasn't his best game he's played since he's been here, certainly. And for whatever reason that was, the cold or whatever, doesn't really matter at this point. And so, again, I thought it was good. He took accountability in front of the team last night, took accountability in here, took accountability with me. I take accountability. I played a big part in that as well. And so I think it's good to see when your leaders do that, and I'm not surprised that he did that. That's who he is.
He's going to play the rest of the way. Burrow's going to start the last three games, provided that he is healthy. There does seem to be a tangible, and Rhyme Time, you're the Bengal fan among us here. There does seem to be a tangible anger now in a Bengal fan base that feels like it's coming to a head a little bit.
Yeah, because like there's these pieces that went to a Super Bowl, and what, they've missed the playoffs 3 years in a row now? And I always go back to just last year and the year that Joe Burrow had and the chase to try to get into the postseason with just all offense, basically. Or just you're just trying to outscore teams, and he put up ridiculous numbers. And you're not really going to remember it because he didn't get an MVP that year when he easily could have if they had more success.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And it's a massive. Is there coaching changes, front office changes? That ownership usually doesn't like to pay people not to do a job. So something to watch for there. Both of the Ohio teams, in terms of the offseason, critical for both of them. The Browns and the build, and the Bengals to try to flip on the fly and get back to being competitive. The Blue Jackets are on the struggle bus, kids. It's been a long stretch of poor play. Porty in 2 minutes on that. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Chip and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The Gloves. Shelly Time.
Sponsored by Midwest Cards.
Experience collecting in a whole new way.
I pitch it being for Shelly Time today, the best in the business, the great Aaron Portsline, great friend of the program, covers the Jackets at the Athletic and the NHL, of course. Before we get into this team, buddy, I did want to ask you about the move out of Buffalo this morning, Jarmo Kekäläinen getting the general manager job there. Incredible scout as a GM, some hits, some misses. What do you make of him getting hired over there, pal?
Yeah, you know what? That seemed inevitable, I think, ever since he joined there, what was it, 8 months ago? I know there was talk in Buffalo that they were hiring their predecessor before anybody else could. I think everybody assumed Jarmo was going to get back into it in that capacity. I'm happy for him. I mean, listen, it's been an amazing, difficult, and exciting all at once last 48 hours for Yarmo. But first of all, thoughts to him and his family at the passing of his father, Kari Kekalainen, who was a huge part of his life. And then, you know, a day later or so, he's announced that the Sabres GM. So what a whirlwind. I've talked to him a bit privately, and it's obviously a crazy time for him right now. But I'm happy for him. And I think sometimes GMs in their second go-round are able to apply the lessons, mistakes that they made the first time, and it can really help them. So I wish nothing but success for him.
This has been a struggle for the Union Blue for a minute now. Losers of five straight, just two, and I think their last 11. The third periods have been with. There's a million things we can get into here, but I'm interested in this because I do think because of the parity in the East, alarm bells aren't going off maybe the way that they should be, because despite all the losing, they're still not being buried in the East because everybody kind of beats up on each other a little bit. Is that providing some cover for this team where maybe there should have been a little more criticism along the way?
Well, I think it was providing cover. I say was because for the longest time, I mean, you like two of their last 13 is what you said. I think that's right. But they've gotten points in seven of those 13. That's not good enough. I'm not saying that. But you're treading water in a lot of those games. Even if you're losing, you're getting points in overtime or shootouts. So you're kind of hanging around the pack in that respect by just getting a point some nights when you probably wanted another. The reason I said was is because now they've lost four in a row in regulation. Mm-hmm. And look how quickly the standings change, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're now 4 points. They're in the basement now by 4 points, where they would play games a couple weeks ago where you're like, yeah, they're in seventh place, but they win one. They win tonight, they're in third. That's no longer the case, right? So they're now just two wins from getting out of last place, which obviously isn't the goal. But they're starting to stack a lot of teams ahead of them. And Bo, I think the biggest concern is they have seven regulation wins all year, right? So that's the tiebreaker. So when you're setting yourself up for, a lot of teams you've got to pass, but also you've got to be better than them. You can't rely on the tiebreaker to get you through. So
I mean, we're 32 games in, and this that you are who you are kind of at this point. I mean, you're a third of the way into this thing, but more than a third of the way. How do you make sense of what is consistently happened in the third period with this team?
It has to be mental, right? I think it's mental. I can't imagine. I know. I mean, the players say that they're not being coached to dial back and be, you know, hyper-conservative and basically just play to not allow a goal, which just doesn't work anymore in the NHL. I think it's mental. I think teams go through this. I've not seen it go on as long as it has this time, but I've seen it before. Pittsburgh's going through it right now. I mean, Pittsburgh with Crosby, Malkin, like, come on. Like, these guys who have won cups, and it's in their heads. And, you know, there are some nights, there have been different ways that they've lost, but then there have been some nights where you're like, it wouldn't have mattered if it was a five-goal lead. They're giving it up. Like, it's psychological at some point. They've been out. I mean, just look at their deal, first period, second period, third period. They are plus one in the first period over the whole arc of the season. So a little over, you know, right where you want to be, but a little bit better. Plus two in the second period, minus 19 in the third. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something. And it's not just bad breaks, bad bounces.
You know, when this thing was all starting to come together, and last year you have, you know, just the incredible tragedy and emotion that comes with it, and they rode that wave. And, you know, we talked about, hey, be relevant, make that outdoor game count. I remember you and I having that conversation. Yep. It did, and it was awesome. It was an all-time, you know, Columbus sports memory, what happened with that outdoor game. But then coming out of that chase last year, the expectation is, okay, now be better. And sometimes with young teams, that isn't necessarily the case. To a man, when you talk to the folks that are in charge of this, did they think that they would be better than they have been?
Oh, no question. There's no question. And several of them even used the word failure. Failure if they don't make the playoffs this year. that's how they looked at this season, and they should have. I mean, they missed it by 2 points last season. I think what you're seeing here, and I don't think people will want to acknowledge this, but last year was so fraught with emotion and passion and a sense of loss and a sense of playing for a greater purpose. I think you had every player on that team, two hands on the rope, pulling as hard as they could. And I think with the success that they had last year, the way that the young players and the veterans, but the young players appeared to be really launching, I think there's a natural tendency to like, okay, these guys can pull the rope. Here's where we're at. And just the guard goes down, even if it's a half a tick. I mean, they're not scoring like they did last year. They're down almost a half a goal a game, which is a lot. And they wanted to be a better defensive team. They're giving up more goals per game than they did last year. That's the wrong direction with all of it. It's getting real now because as you mentioned, it's getting the midpoint of the season and the standings are no longer this big murky mess. There's starting to be some separation.
And I think the other thing that you, and sometimes wrongly assume, is that young players will continue to take big steps. And if they take them, then it's something else. And I'm going to get to Fantilli in a second, but a kid who I think if you would have told me at the start of this season that he'd be sitting here with 8 points, I would have said that's not possible that Kent Johnson's got 8 points. It's not possible that he scored 24 goals last year. Like, you just assumed that there would be a natural progression. His ice time's down 3 minutes a game from what it was a year ago. He was supposed to be a centerpiece and potentially still can be. But what's going on with him?
No clue. I wish I could give you a definitive answer. I don't think anybody knows. He's frustrated. Obviously, the ice time has changed. I mean, the role now has changed. He's on the fourth line again tonight. This is not ideal. I think people are starting to wonder if there are the answers in place on the coaching staff to help young, skilled players. And that Chinnikov's getting a role now. He started to awaken a little bit. We'll see where that goes. But how does it work that Chinnikov and Johnson both end up parked deep in the lineup and not able to get out of this? I think, you know, there's a style that this coaching staff likes. It's the style of hockey that most of them played. Tough, physical. I'm not sure there are the resources to help a Kent Johnson sort of awaken. So who does he go to on the coaching staff to say, you know, what are we doing here with this? And, you know, it's a skilled guy who sees the game differently. He just does. And you don't, I know they want him to play north-south, but this is a guy that sometimes with the puck on his stick, you can think he's Patrick freaking Kane. He's that skilled. You don't want him to just be another bot that's skating forward and back and dumping the puck in. They need him to be better. He needs to be better. I mean, these are the guys that you lost for the right to draft these guys. Mm-hmm. These are the guys that have to work. And he's right now the poster child for that, the struggling. And the sooner it turns around, the better. But I'm not smart enough, and I've not asked anybody who has a definitive answer as to why it's gone south.
Yeah, and it dovetails into the second one, which is about Fantilli, and he's been very productive, but there's nights where he's not out there right away in overtime. It's just not, I don't understand it, and especially juxtaposed to the team that's coming in here tonight in Anaheim, who Leo Carlson, who was drafted one spot ahead of Fantilli, but viewed as kind of very similar prospects, he's lights out. He's got 41 points, 17 goals, 24 assists, and Anaheim sitting there tied with Vegas atop the Pacific, and I'm looking at Fantilli, and I'm like, that's supposed to be him. Like, That's the other part of it. Maybe that dovetails kind of into the point that you just made on Johnson, that there's a disconnect happening here.
Yeah, and there's some reluctance there, I think, to completely turn him loose, and I don't fully understand. And I'll say this, at this point last year, or really towards the end of last year, we would have said, geez, what's going on with Carlson? Because Fantilli is way ahead of him, 31 goals last year. This is the year that Carlson popped. You remember a couple years ago, there was frustration in Anaheim and elsewhere that Carlson was in and out of the lineup. They were sort of easing him into the NHL. maybe now we can say that was a great idea because the kids look fantastic. These games, when Anaheim plays Columbus, it's always going to be a Fantilli v. Carlson, understory. But I want Fantilli out there. Frankly, the way that he's played, I know face-off is huge and at the start of OT. I get it. Mm-hmm. So you want your guy that's going. But to me, Fantilli should be no more than the second guy out for overtime. I think he's a gamer. I think he wants that opportunity. The one that really threw me and asked about it afterwards, Luca Pinelli, bright prospect, looks like he's going to be a good young player. But his second NHL game, and he's out first with Monahan against mm-hmm. Sidney Crosby and the Penguins, and I don't need to tell you how that ended. Not putting it on Pinelli. It's just that's not just a choice about why Pinelli. That's a question about why all of the other guys on the bench are, who are those guys, right? Johnson, Fantilli, we could go on. Why those guys aren't out there in that setting. And I don't think there's a good answer for it.
Yeah, it's... You're the best for a reason, buddy. Good insight as always. Appreciate your time, Jackets and Ducks tonight. Thanks for giving us a little bit of your time today, pal.
All right, Bo. Anytime, man.
All right, there he is. The great Aaron Portsline at The Athletic on the Jackets and the NHL side of things. Get you three things on a Tuesday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you. We know you love the Buckeyes. We know you love the Jackets. We know you're wearing a red shirt. Just freak the hell out of someone. The Fan.
Check. Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Your family might not listen to you, but we will. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's the Fan Call-In Show, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
You're welcome. It's almost Football Friday. All play and no work.
Sponsored by Tansky Sawmill Toyota.
Your home for football, The Fan.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast.
Or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Reese, what are you on the poll today?
Daily Fan Poll asks, with 3 weeks left in the regular season, who would be your pick right now to win the AFC? Your choices are Broncos, Patriots, Bills. Right now, 48% say the Bills, 28% say the Patriots, 22% say the Denver Broncos.
Feels like now or never Bills, right? Yep. You can't take care of it now. And what's interesting is that I don't think this is even close to the best Bills team, not close, that they've had through the years. But Allen's been incredible the last couple of weeks. And with all of those other folks who were a thorn in his side not being participants, it feels like they need to take full advantage of it. All right, time for three things on a Tuesday. Hit it, guys.
Three things.
Sponsored by Scioto Downs. Your play, your perks, your Caesars reward spot.
All right, number one for me. So had a full slate of basketball over the weekend with the boys, and we're now in the throes of it. So like NBC's games are all during the week. So we had a game Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and then the two littles go on the weekends. Last weekend we had six games. This weekend we're going to have six games spread out over Saturday and Sunday. Bootsy's team is not particularly good. They got great kids. They're trying their darndest, but compared to some of my other groups at this age, they're just not. And they hadn't won a game yet. And this past Saturday night, we're playing a team that at the time was either undefeated. No, they had one loss, but a really good team, great program. And the coach came over, and we were talking, really nice guy. And I said, man, we're just not real good this year. And you know, it's going to be a bit of a struggle. And lo and behold, we ended up winning. And I'm not exactly sure how, but we did, and the little buggers fought. And if you're curious how many times in the last 2 minutes of a game that we were up six that I screamed at the top of my lungs, we are winning. Because for whatever reason, they could not switch to, oh, we're ahead. We don't have to shoot every 2 seconds. We don't have to sprint down and try to make a layup. We can actually just dribble this out a little bit and actually win the game. Yes, the number on that was probably 1.6 million. But it was one of those cool things that they celebrated and were able to get a win. But I didn't see it coming at all. So good job out of them. Proud of them.
The act like you've been there command just does not fly. Because it's like,
when you haven't. We haven't.
Never really been in this spot.
I said yesterday in practice, I'm like, boys, end of game scenario, we're going to work a little bit. I didn't know we had to work it, but we're going to work it a little bit.
Did you have any cartwheels this time at practice?
We did not. No cartwheels. No cartwheels this time, thank God.
I'm going to make this my first thing. I put words into your mouth yesterday, Bo, hosting the show with Austin Ward, saying that you would provide a full Willy Wonka recap the play yesterday. And I did a bad job out of me reminding you that this morning, but maybe on tomorrow's program.
Yeah.
A more detailed recap of how that went Monday.
I'll get that for you. So Bootsy, he was History Hank. So it was like a Wonka through history. And instead of the chocolate factory, it was a museum that came to life.
Did someone still become an inflatable blueberry?
We did not have inflatable blueberries.
Huh.
I'll give you a full breakdown, though.
I don't know that it's really been mentioned much that if he keeps up this pace, Bruce Thornton could become the all-time leading scorer at Ohio State. He is currently ninth with 1,705 points, and Dennis Hobson has 2,096 points. Mm-hmm. They have 22 guaranteed games left on the schedule. That includes one Big Ten tournament game for sure. Don't know how many wins they'll get there or potential NCAA tournament, but he just needs to average 17.8 points per game the rest of the season, and he will be the all-time leading scorer at Ohio State.
I mean, you mean like he has to average 17.8 or just the rest of the season?
The rest of the season he has to average that.
Okay, so his point total at the end of the year has to be 17.8 and then he gets it? That's the thing.
No, just for the 22 games played. Yes.
Oh, well, he's he can definitely get there.
Yeah.
But speaking of, not enough respect on the name of Dennis Hobson. And what he was at Ohio State in the mid-80s. I mean, he was an absolute stud. I did not have that William Buford had tied Jerry Lucas for third that list. I didn't have either.
Michael Redd, sixth.
Barring injury, he ought to get it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I fully think he can get there.
Yeah, really is. Number two for me, a development in the Christmas movies that I enjoy to watch this time of year, the ones that my wife and I sometime will watch. For the longest time, Love Actually was the one that we enjoyed the most. We watch it every year and have for almost 20 years, I suppose, now. I think Four Christmases passed it. And I don't know if just the sappy stuff that comes... And I still love Love Actually. It's still great. I've watched Four Christmases like four times in the last month. It might just because it's on cable and it's opposite a sporting event that's in commercial. That could be it with me because I'm still a flipper. But every single scene, there's something in it that I love. It does a great job. Over the weekend, it played into Wedding Crashers. I'm like, how can I not beat that? Just go from one to the next.
Yeah, I think that Four Christmases, I mean, it is one of the all-time rewatchable Christmas movies.
It is.
Because it doesn't get as old as some of the other films with the similar gags that you've seen over 20 years. And I wonder if it's just in its like wash, rinse cycle. Where they're saying, all right, what's a Christmas movie that we know people are going to like but haven't seen in a long time? Here's that. And
there's the four set pieces, right? Like they go to the houses, and so like wherever you jump in, you can jump in. It's easy.
I thought this was interesting, with the NBA Cup Championship that probably not a lot of people are going to watch tonight, at least not in our listening area. But it's much more interesting that Victor Wembanyama is playing against the New York Knicks than the Oklahoma City Thunder playing against the New York Knicks, in my opinion. And that's wild because OKC's only lost twice this season and is going to, at least for the entire year, have the discussion of can they chase down the Warriors record?
Oh, they're getting it.
Feels like it.
Yeah.
But Wemby being on tonight for something that they want to have matter makes it matter more because the NBA needs Victor Wembanyama to play a healthy season.
Hang the banner.
8:30 on Prime, if you're interested.
Second thing for me, I don't know what it is about my dog and peanut butter, but he is like Beetlejuice when I go to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Haven't you given him it yet?
I have given him peanut butter every time I do.
Yeah.
And every time I make a sandwich, and now I'm to the point where I'm not even calling for him to come and have some.
Just open the jar.
I whispered it to my daughter one time, and all I hear is footprints on the hardwood. This morning, as I'm making one, I hear him shake off at the top of the steps. because he knows I'm making peanut butter and jelly. It's unbelievable.
You ever hear, did I tell you the time my dad, we have one jar of peanut butter for Buddy Garrity
it's
and one
an all-timer.
For the family.
Tell it again.
We have one, this will be the final for all of us. We have one jar of peanut butter is for Buddy Garrity, the golden retriever. The rest is for the family. My dad, I came out and he's making a peanut butter sandwich in the morning, which one of the things he does. And he's using the peanut butter from Buddy Garrity's peanut butter. And I go, Dad, that's Buddy's. No big deal. The next time he visited, he ran it back.
Oh, my gosh.
He's choosing the Buddy Garrity
Montana
peanut butter,
tough.
For God's sakes.
Oh, my
Speaking
gosh.
Speaking of, well, this is a good way to get out of this one. The get in the price, we started the day with Montana State. We'll end it with Montana State. The get in the gate price in Bozeman on Saturday, $654 to get in the gate.
For an FCS semifinal?
Yeah.
Good for them.
That used to be like $8. Not for Cat Grizz, but for the rest of them. So a little bit of demand there. We're back tomorrow. Rothman and Ice coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
During this 10-second promo, Rothman will lose money gambling on something.
People like you come here and blow the family nest egg that built this town.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call